little bit hazy, blame it on Rio.
What if we acted like fools, broke a few rules? What do we care? Blame it on Rio.
I know that everybody, in honor of the Olympics, is playing the Barry Manilow song with the word Rio in it. But I found the worst song, the Copacabana one? Has it. And I heard Steve earlier playing Girl from Ipanema, which is also applicable.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
But
I
found
like this.
That. It's the worst song with the word Rio in it ever.
Is it a joke? Is it Maya Rudolph and Martin Short?
No, but it's in their style. This is from a classic movie, Blame It on Rio, with Michael Caine.
Oh, I know that movie.
Michelle Johnson, a very young Demi Moore.
It's not a classic movie.
Here's why it's a classic. It's one of those movies that when you're a teenager, you see it and you go, how about this? Is this not one of the greatest things that's ever been on celluloid? And then you see it a couple years later and you go, what was I thinking? This is awful.
Didn't have a lot of choices when it came out.
You know, I was telling Kevin, our producer, that there was a series of movies in the 70s and into the 80s where the topic of the movie was that a young person was having an affair with an older person. Blame It on Rio is one of them. Michelle Johnson in the movie is, I think, 16 years old, and she's having an affair with Michael Caine. I cite the example of My Tutor, where a young Matt Lattanzi is having an affair with his French teacher.
Well, he was a babe. Wasn't he married to Olivia Newton-John for a while? They made a great couple.
Yep. So there were a bunch of movies where, you know, and I know they were geared towards high school kids, but the premise was high school child having an affair with much older person, and we all thought, isn't that cool? But then when you get older, you go, no, that's awful. Huh? What if we acted like fools, broke a few rules?
Okay, but this is even worse than an older guy, younger girl, because best friends and their daughters holiday in Rio, only for one to fall for the other's daughter. That makes it way worse.
Yeah, it's really a twisted movie. It really
is. But I'm glad you think it's a classic.
No, when I was a teenager, like, honestly, my friends and I, we were like, this is great. And then I saw it a few years later and I went, oh, no. How could I have been that wrong?
Because you were a teenage boy?
I guess that's part of it. When I remember the other movie I told you about, My Tutor, when it came out on, now at that time we didn't have DVDs, it was just VHS or beta. When it came out on VHS, one of my friends bought it and we watched it like a half a dozen times over the next 2 or 3 weeks. We thought, well, imagine that. You're a high school kid and you got this beautiful French teacher and she takes a liking to you.
Ooh la
in the
la.
Swimming pool. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I never saw that one.
But no, but Ooh La La sums it up beautifully. That could have been your one-minute review if you had your own one-minute review show somewhere. All right. The thing about the Olympics is this. I've never felt as bad for a gymnast in my life as I feel for this guy whose leg just decided to go all wobbly on him. Did you see this video?
I don't understand how he broke it. I know he landed on it, but it would look like a regular land to me.
It did, didn't it? Of
a gymnast who does that every day.
Yeah. I blame it on Rio. It's that Zika virus, Wendy. It's making people's legs go all crazy.
That was the worst thing, and I really, really made a big mistake showing my younger son Dylan that. I said, check this out, and he goes, oh, my, why would you make me watch that? Can I see it again? It's one of those things, you're grossed out, but didn't you watch it a few times?
No, I watched it once, and Kevin will attest to this because he was in the room with me. I walked out of the room. I had to leave the room.
Heebie-jeebied right out, yeah.
I had to leave the room. Because you see, like you said, he does. I don't know any gymnastic terms at all. I just know he did something that a gymnast
would. He jumped over the horse.
Total term. That's a term, right?
Is that a term?
Oh, that's a thing.
So, and there was a dismount.
Term, good.
Right? So there was that, and there was a hamel camel. I think he did a hamel camel.
No.
He didn't? I thought he did. So then,
that's what he jumped over.
Right.
It looked like a hamel camel.
It looked like it was a hamel camel. So then, upon
landing,
on
the mat in a form that looked like he landed normally.
Yeah. So what went horribly wrong?
Obviously, he put more weight on that leg, and the bone just snapped in half.
You see his leg going at like a 90-degree angle. And then, do you know the worst part? And I don't know why this isn't as big of a story, but it gets even worse. Can we take a quick break and I'll tell you something even worse that happened that no one knows about?
Blame it on Rio.
I blame it on Rio. We'll take it. Are you sure he didn't do a Hamill Camel? I thought he did a Hamill Camel. We'll take a quick break and then more Olympic coverage from us, WGN.
What if we both went a little bit crazy? Blame it on Rio.
What if our hearts got a little bit hazy? Blame it on Rio.
What if we acted like fools, broke a few rules?
Why not at the opening ceremony? You have all the nations, 104 nations, all just do a karaoke version of that song. Wouldn't that have been something?
I got to find out who that woman is because she's terrible.
She is. She doesn't even hold the note. And they could have processed it and made it sound like she was holding the note, but they opted not to.
That was before auto-tune and everything. It's like a baby singing goat.
Huh? La, 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 la. That's beautiful. All right, so we're telling you the story about this guy, an Olympic gymnast, Samir Ait Said, who broke his leg on the vault. He's one of France's top gymnasts. I almost said was one of France's top gymnasts. I think I think his competing is done for a little while.
He said he's already looking at 2020.
Oh,
yeah, but he's
got nowhere else to look right
four
now.
4 years
right,
off.
In his hospital room.
Yeah, I mean, he's done for this Olympics.
Four years off. It's so tragic. You know, it reminded me, there a couple of events that it reminded me of. Number one, I don't know if you'll remember this, Ryan, Dave Dravecki, a pitcher for the Giants,
yeah,
who one time threw a pitch and his arm snapped. You heard it. You heard like a giant snapping noise, and then he just fell to the ground in agony because, I mean, his arm popped with the pitch.
Yeah.
Have I seen video of that maybe?
If you have, I mean, like this video, I got to warn you, it's really hard to watch. And the other one was that basketball player. Ryan, was this 2 years ago or 3 years
Kevin
ago?
Kevin Ware, yeah, with the University of Louisville. I got to tell you guys, I can't watch that stuff. When they tell me something like that's going to happen, I've torn my ACL 3 times, so my knee's kind of bent the wrong way. Mm. And I get that feeling, like whenever I see something like that, whenever I see a player go down, I can feel it in my knee. My knee kind of twinges and says, don't look at that.
I think about it every day when we leave here, when we go toward where our parking lot is. You have the option of walking down the ramp, which the civilized people do, or jumping. And when you're not with me, I jump.
I'm a jumper.
I don't jump. You guys.
Ryan and I are jumpers, Wendy. We have it in us
snap,
to jump. But
crack.
That's
even if there's a car there, I just go for it.
I do too. I'll jump over the car. But do you, as you're jumping, Ryan, do you say to yourself, like in my head, I'm thinking about that Kevin Ware guy. Is that his name, Kevin Ware?
Yeah.
I'm always thinking about him and the way his bone came out of his leg when he did it.
Yeah,
it was awful.
It was really gross. I'm always wondering what the security guys think when they see us, you know, stand on the platform ready to jump. That's a pretty good, I mean, what is that? Maybe 2 feet? I don't know.
It's about 3.
It's, yeah, close to 3, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, just to make yourselves look better.
Maybe
but
five
you, Mr.
Or six,
ACL,
maybe.
Why are you jumping, dummy?
I do a lot of dumb things, all right?
Have you tried to jump up it?
No.
Like it's easy to jump down it thanks to gravity.
Challenge
thank
accepted
you, Sir Isaac
now, Green. Though.
But now I'm
going to give that a go.
Yeah, I'm going
to
jump
especially
up
if
it.
There's a car there. Then I'm going to jump from the car to it.
Yep.
We go live to our Olympic correspondent, Dave Ennett, right now.
Well, no, you mentioned the Dave Dravecki thing.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Bill, first of all, that's one of the worst things you'll
awful.
Ever see. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But he had cancer.
Right.
And he was coming back. And
was that his first game back, Dave, or not? I don't remember.
Well, he came back in the minors.
Yeah.
But I think he made one or two appearances before he snapped
did
his
he?
Arm. Yeah.
And then was he, I'm trying to remember, once his arm popped like that, he was done, wasn't he? Did he ever come back to baseball?
I don't think he ever came back.
I don't remember him
coming
back.
He had to have more surgery. And
he had chemo, obviously, because that really makes your bones brittle.
Right.
I mean,
and I think he had more cancer also.
Ugh.
Poor thing. Yeah.
But he's still with us, right?
Yes,
Dave Dravecki's still alive.
He is still
okay,
living.
That's good news.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
I injured my knee, ACL, and tore ligaments my first week of freshman year in high school.
Yeah.
Long jumping. The gym teacher at the time did not want to walk across the football field to get the rake to rake the sand. And it was raining the day before, so the sand was totally wet.
Yeah.
So when I long jumped a bunch of times in gym class, everything was fine. And I'm like, I'm going to do one more. The bell's going to ring. I jumped. I landed. My foot stuck into the wet sand, and the rest of my body just twisted around. And when I went to put weight on that knee, it bent completely backwards. So it's bad. I didn't want to watch that Olympian who cracked his bone. But
Samir Ait Said?
It was
you
hard.
You could commiserate. You had a similar incident.
Yeah, but that, it wasn't a compound fracture like that where the bone just broke, and was it sticking out through the skin?
Not in this case, but you
doesn't
see...
that show how elastic your skin is? Because that bone just snapped.
Yeah, yeah.
The Joe Theismann injury on Monday Night Football is another one.
Remind me that
which
I
part
only
of
remember
his
a little
body?
Bit.
That was his leg, and it got snapped.
Oh, I do remember.
Remember that?
It was a tackle. It was a bad tackle, right?
Yeah, I think it was Lawrence Taylor.
Really bad for him.
And it got bent wrong under him, and it just snapped in front of the entire Monday Night Football audience.
Because you have to think, when you have an injury, and I applaud this guy if he is able to come back, this gymnast, but you have to think when something like that happens, can I ever rebound for something like that?
Especially that sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, think about Derrick Rose, right? I mean, his knees. I mean, I don't think the confidence ever came back after those after those injuries.
No, it's tough. By the way, just long-time WGN employees will know, at one time we were told never jump off the loading dock.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, apparently they're more lenient about it.
they sent me a memo inviting me to jump off the loading dock. Yeah.
Well, unless there's somebody out there smoking, who's going to see you do it?
They have cameras everywhere.
I know, but they don't, how often do they check
it? Wendy, I'm telling you, I got a note in my permanent file.
I like that it was a big enough problem for them to address it by way of a note. Enough people were doing, because every time I do it, I go, what am I, 11 years old? Why am I doing this?
That's why they don't want you to do it. You're not 11 anymore.
I know, but it saves about 9 or 10 seconds.
Great. It'll save a lot more if you crack something.
Now I will. I know now I will. I've opened the door.
Hey, Craig, we're talking sports injuries. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Wendy. How are you? Hello, Bill.
Hi.
I'm calling in regards to that the guy, the mixed martial arts guy.
Who's
that? Mixed martial arts they were having when it first came out. My first match that I was watching on TV, the guy kicked someone. I don't remember the names. But you see his bone just come out of his leg.
Oh.
He kicked. Oh. That was my first match and my last match.
Yeah. Once you experience something like that, you're kind of done, right?
I saw that one. It was pretty nasty. Like, he goes to block it or something like that, and then it just dangles.
Your bones aren't supposed to dangle.
My stomach is flip-flopping now.
All right. Well, have some Maalox or something. Thank you, Craig. And Kate wants to jump in before we go to break. Hi, Kate.
Hey. And the end of the story is when they put him on the stretcher to take him over to the vet. Or the van.
Vet.
It's Rio, Wendy. They don't have doctors.
You knew I was going to say that. Anyway, to the ambulance, they were just getting ready to put him in, and they dropped him.
Yep.
Okay, this poor guy.
The ETs, the ETs come and they help you on the ambulance, Wendy. They dropped him.
EMTs.
Yeah, the EMTs. They just dropped him.
The ETs are the aliens.
They have the long fingers. No wonder they dropped
them. Yeah, because their fingers are all long and stuff. But
they did?
Yeah. So they at that did. Point, don't you go, if you're him, don't you go, what blame else could possibly, well, you blame it on Rio, and then you go, what else could possibly happen to me?
The ambulance could have crashed.
Right. I know.
See, poor guy.
Wendy.
Yes.
Think of that. Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Boy, if that's not a sign that, they say a coincidence is a hint from God.
Yeah.
He's getting some hints.
Some
don't do this
hints.
Anymore.
I know. All right. We need to take a break.
You know what her name is, by the way? This terrible woman. I feel really guilty. Her name is Lisa Roberts Gillen.
The lady singing right
yes.
now?
Yes. Yeah. She was born in Decatur, Georgia.
Yeah.
She's known as Lisa Roberts. She dropped the Gillen.
So
and
no one could find her.
She's an actress and producer known for Runaway Bride, Duplicity, Made in Manhattan, and she performs. That's her singing right now.
Isn't this beautiful?
She's still working.
Yeah.
Mother's Day, the 2016 movie.
Oh, she is still working.
Yeah.
That's very recent. Wow.
Hope she's not singing in that
movie.
No,
I hope not. Yikes. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. What if we both went a little bit crazy? Blame it on Rio. This is the most beautiful song that's ever been written. Ryan, can I share something with you? And I just told Wendy this, and Wendy, you pretended to be interested, and I appreciate that, because this is the kind of thing, I tell my wife stuff like this all the time, and the first 3 weeks that we dated, she seemed really excited, but then as time went on, I could tell she wasn't. Can I tell you what this is, Ryan?
Please do, yes.
All right. This is just a weird coincidence. We were talking about Blame It on Rio, that song. In that movie, the girl that has the affair with Michael Caine is an actress named Michelle Johnson. Michelle Johnson, years later, went on to marry Matt Williams, the third baseman for the San Francisco Giants, who was the third baseman when Dave Dravecki snapped his arm. Isn't that kind of a weird coincidence?
Unbelievable.
Yep.
That's crazy.
He's pretending to be interested, too.
It is interesting. I like how you connected the dots.
Yeah.
That worked out well.
Listen, yeah. I want more credit. I'm trying to do some research while you were telling me this, and I said you should play the lotto.
Yeah.
Because that's just
that
a weird mixing of things.
Right.
I listen to you.
All right. But you got to admit, that's like my wife, here's how she, like if I told Terry this, she'd do this. She goes, and why do I care? Like I would get that. And she's right.
That's just payback for all the new clothes I'm getting, and Kevin acts somewhat interested, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So, see, we all have things we're interested
in. Yeah, all right.
I at least talked back to you. Right. I mean, I said something like, oh, you should play the lottery.
Yeah. All right.
That was a great feigning of interest when I wasn't even really listening to you.
Ryan took a nap. Look, I could see Ryan in the monitor. He's got a blankie and he's sleeping.
Need a little R&R. I'm just resting my eyes.
I'm surprised it didn't mean more to Ryan being the baseball fan that he is.
And movie aficionado.
It's interesting because while I think of Matt Williams as the third baseman for the Giants, who were very good in the late 80s, obviously, I also think of him as he was the manager for the Arizona Diamondbacks for a little bit there, right? And
correct.
He kind of ran that team into the ground, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
All right, well, I want to talk Olympics again, if I could only hear that music one more time.
Kevin, do we have the music?
The music.
Blame it on Rio.
That's not the music, Ryan. Sorry. You got to, hold on.
Just have that thing ready to roll all day.
There it is.
What if we both went a little bit crazy?
Crazy!
What if our hearts got a little
this
bit
is beautiful.
Hazy? Blame it on Rio.
Why wasn't this the Olympic theme? Why don't they play this over on NBC?
Because it's lame.
I guess they want people to watch the games and work against them.
This is my favorite part.
It's the worst part.
It's the best worst part.
Everybody.
Went a little bit crazy. Blame it on Rio.
What if our hearts got a little bit hazy? Blame it on Rio.
What if we both went a little bit crazy? Blame it on Rio. What if our hearts went a little bit hazy? Blame that on Rio, too.
Lyrics are amazing.
Yeah.
Remember there was somebody who had seizures every time they heard Mary Hart's voice from Entertainment Tonight?
Yes.
This is a close second, this woman. So everybody's wondering all about, first of all, Michael Phelps is amazing. Here's a guy who carries the flag for the opening ceremonies. And did he just score his 19th?
He is the most decorated Olympian in the history
of all time.
Of Olympics. Yeah. He's got more medals, more gold medals.
It's the cupping? Mm-hmm.
Explain. What do you mean? It's
you
the
saw
cupping?
The little giant circular polka dots on his back.
Yes.
It's cupping.
He has malaria.
No, he does not. Then it would be Zika anyway. Way to know your diseases. You would be wrong.
Olympic diseases for 400, Alex? That answer is?
The cupping. I remember I had this done last year. I have to go back to my... my whatever she is, my
cupist.
She's cupping, and also what are the needles? I can't
acupuncture.
Yes, in cupping, practitioners of this healing technique place specialized cups on the skin. You can Google and see these. It looks like he's got suction cups, like he's part squid.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And you. My doctor puts a lighter in the little glass thing, puts it on my back, and then there's this suction that it doesn't hurt, but it
has to hurt.
It doesn't hurt. It feels like pressure. And what it's supposed to do is release, it's like gets deep down in there to release the tension, like my trapezius muscle, you know, like your neck.
The ones that you use when you're on
the trapeze.
The trapeze, yeah.
I believe that's why a trapeze was named that,
is.
Or one or the other.
It is.
But it's just like from your neck down to your shoulders, there's a sheath of muscles, and that's where I hold all my tension. And when she cupped my neck, I'm telling you something. I stopped clenching my jaw. I mean, it relieved so much deep tissue stress.
But it looked like you were in a forest fire, like when you, the marks that it left, and they weren't permanent. They only lasted, how long did you say, 3 or 4 days?
Well, I also had gua sha. That was the weird one. That looked
That's
like somebody
Thai
whipped
dish,
me.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You had that with the... You had that with the ginger sauce, which is the best way to have gua sha.
But that's really weird. It's just... She puts some kind of oil on you and just rubs your back with a spoon not unlike the spoon that you eat soup with at an Asian restaurant.
Oh, yeah? That
you
kind
know,
of, they use
weird,
that kind of spoon?
She just kind of scrapes it. That's a different thing. That really reduced stress. But the cupping, it was so dark burgundy and looked really bad.
Oh.
And then that faded in about 3 to 4 days. And then when I continued to go weekly, she stuck them on harder and left them on longer, and I barely had a mark.
So you build up a tolerance for them over time, right?
I don't know if it's a tolerance. The suction typically lasts for only a few minutes, but enough time to cause the capillaries just beneath the surface to rupture, creating the circular eye-catching bruises. And I really do love polka dots, so maybe I should get that done
more.
Yeah,
they look good on you.
Mr. Phelps has been doing this, and physiologically cupping is thought to draw blood to the affected areas, reducing soreness and speeding healing of overworked muscles. Athletes who use it swear by it, and it keeps them injury-free and speeds recovery. And Michael Fred Phelps, by the way, isn't that a weird middle name? Michael Fred.
Well, yeah, maybe it was a
Frederick
family.
Would have been better.
Right.
Just Michael
a little
Fred.
More official sounding.
He believes in it, and he's doing pretty well.
So he does this before a meet or after, like when?
Probably both.
One would be, it would help him to do it before and after.
They did a study back in 2012 of 61 people with chronic neck pain.
Yeah.
And they compared cupping to a technique called progressive muscle relaxation, or PMR. And that's when a patient deliberately tenses his muscles and then focuses on relaxing them. Half the patients used cupping, the other half used this PMR. And they both had reductions in pain after 12 weeks of treatment.
Oh. How about
and
that?
The patients who did the cupping scored higher on measurements of well-being and felt less pain when pressure was applied to the area.
There must be some downside to it, right? There has to be, other than the fact that you honestly, you looked when you came in, you showed
time.
Us the scars, and we begged you to stop. Everyone said, please, don't do this to yourself anymore.
I know, but it felt so good, and I am very fear complected.
It felt good during, or like when it was over?
It felt good during.
It did,
and afterwards, it just felt like I had kind of a bad sunburn.
Oh,
I mean, I am pretty fair complected, so when I used to get hickeys back in
last year, 2 years ago,
they would be really, really dark.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have fairer skin.
Oh, yeah,
and there was another experiment involving 40 patients who suffered from knee arthritis, which I have.
Yeah.
People that underwent cupping reported less pain after 4 months compared to a control group that wasn't treated at all.
Oh.
It's just weird, but it feels really good. And Jennifer Aniston has had it done. Gwyneth Paltrow, you see like these little polka dots on their back.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
But it was wild to see Michael Phelps doing it.
I would think, well, I guess any line of work would lend itself to this if you're feeling some kind of pressure, but especially an athlete of his caliber, I guess, why not?
There's a doctor that says cupping causes local inflammation, which obviously, because you get a bruise.
Right, sure.
It triggers the immune system to produce these small proteins that enhance communication between the cells to help modulate the immune response. I'm telling you, I haven't gone because I've been busy in probably a month, maybe 2 months now.
Yeah.
I'm going back once a week.
And they will do both the cupping procedure and acupuncture on the same day.
Usually,
don't need to separate that in time.
No, I get the acupuncture. I get like 30 to 40 needles put all over. And I have very nice music that she puts on. And she turns the room dark, just a little glow of a light.
Mm.
I take a little nap.
Oh, do you? You
and
can
then,
sleep during that?
Yeah, I mean, you
even while she's inserting needles in you?
No, it takes her, like, honestly, 30 seconds to just put all the needles
in. Does she have a nail gun or something? She just shoots you up with a nail gun?
Does she use music or anything?
Yeah,
like, what
I
kind
said,
of music, Kevin? Wouldn't this be relaxing?
Oh, my God, I would not be able to relax.
That would relax you?
Warning, warning. I'm here to stress you out. This would be a good control study, though, to have this music on and see if you could still relax while the needles are in you.
That's a great experiment.
I'm going to bring that up.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kevin, are you getting any phone calls yet from people begging you to stop playing?
I have gotten one, actually.
A couple? Yeah, one? Yeah.
708 says this is like a bad love boat nightmare.
This song
totally
does have
is.
That kind of orchestration, doesn't it? Oh,
Gopher's singing it.
Beautiful.
With Julie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know who's getting some flack, Wendy, is the media for their coverage of the Olympics. Some are saying that the media is being sexist in the way they're covering this year's Olympics. I'll explain. Part one is this. NBC sportscaster Dan Hicks was the first to spark outrage when he appeared to credit Hungarian swimmer Katinka Hazu's husband, Shane Tusup, for her world record-breaking win in the 400-meter individual medley on Saturday as the cameras panned over to Tusup, that's the husband of the swimmer, who was also Hazu's coach, the commentator said, "And there's the man responsible."
I don't think he meant it the way it sounded.
I don't think so either.
I mean, you know, remember Nadia Comaneci and Mary Lou Retton?
Yeah.
Their coaches got a ton of credit, too.
Right.
It's not, I mean, she couldn't have done
was
it.
Was that Bella Caroli?
Yes.
Was that the guy? Yeah.
It's so funny because my girlfriend Vicky, who lives in Hawaii, she lives on the Big Island, and during because of she was a gymnast in high school, and there was just one day that Mary Lou Retton was in Hawaii, and she took a picture on a boat with Mary Lou Retton and Bella.
And Bella Caroli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's so weird that I'm bringing that up. They were just hanging out together, but the coach should get a lot of credit.
Right.
It obviously, if she didn't swim it, she wouldn't have won it.
Right. Right.
I don't think that's sexist at all.
Let's say that the coach that she had was a woman. And if he had said that, and there's the woman who's behind this, who's responsible, then nobody's looking in the other way, right?
Right. And I mean, obviously she, you know, did it herself.
Right.
And
sure.
Succeeded, but you always have a good coach behind you.
Right.
Who's your coach these days?
Coach Cleats is his name. Do you know who that is?
No. What's that from?
I think that's from Archie, right? Wasn't that the coach's name in Archie?
Yeah,
coach
yeah.
Cleats? It says, here's what the story goes on to say. It's impossible. Oh, this is Hicks, Dan Hicks, the NBC sportscaster, kind of reeling it in a little. He says, it's impossible to tell Katinka's story accurately without giving appropriate credit to Shane, the coach, her husband, and that's what I was trying to do.
And
I'd buy
that. And that's what he did do, and I don't think he said it. She accomplished this on her very own, obviously,
right.
But it helps to have a good coach behind you.
Absolutely.
Perhaps she didn't win gold before, and due to a great coach.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that bad? We have to relax, man.
I think so, too. Now, the other one, I think, is even easier to explain. You know, there's a guy on the Bears whose wife won a medal, a bronze medal.
Really?
Yeah. Here's what it says. The Chicago Tribune, that's our, you know, that's our paper here, also came under fire for an article and a tweet about Corey Cogdell Unrein's bronze medal-winning performance in the women's trap shooting event. And, Wendy, as you know, that's always the most popular event at any Olympics is the women's trap shooting. That's the one that everybody looks forward to the most. You know this. The tweet focused more on the career of her NFL husband, Mitch Unrein, than on her achievement. Here's what it said. This was the Chicago Tribune's tweet of 2 days ago. The wife of Bears lineman wins a bronze medal at Rio Olympics. And then it showed a picture of her kind of displaying her medal. But I think, I'm going to try my best to verify this, I think that was the angle here in town.
Absolutely.
A guy on the Bears, his wife was competing and won a medal.
They're both athletes. That's what they were saying.
Yeah. I don't think they were.
Oh, loosen up, people. Really? Honestly.
Was that terrible? I don't think that was terrible.
No. What's terrible is the men can wear shorts and shirts when they're doing the beach volleyball, but the girls are in basically bikinis.
They shouldn't have
that's
to wear
sexist.
The bikinis. Take those bikinis off.
Well,
let's
I'm
go
not
a little bit crazy.
Naked.
Blame it on Rio. What if our hearts were like fools? We broke a few rules. What do we care?
Kevin, you're asleep at the wheel.
There it is. That's every time Kevin hypnotized. Well, he gets hypnotized. Did you see him? He gets hypnotized when he plays it. That's better.
Why are the girls in those outfits?
I don't know.
And why aren't the men just shirtless and wearing Speedos?
Well, did you see the guy? There was some guy who came out during the opening ceremonies when all the nations just walked in a circle. They showed this that we could all walk in a circle together. It was very symbolic. Because I was saying to my wife and daughters the other day, I don't think people from 104 nations could just get together and walk in a circle. Well, I was wrong. They did. But there was one guy from Brazil who came out, and he's wearing almost nothing at all. He's all greased up. very handsome guy.
Are you talking about the Tonga flag bearer?
That
the
guy.
Flag bearer of Tonga.
Yeah, the Tonga flag bearer.
That's, you know, that's the what they do like in Tonga.
Right.
They're shirtless, and that's what they
walk
do.
With a flag,
they have a lot of baby oil.
Greased up. Yeah. Boy, the baby oil.
Makes the muscles show.
That
better.
Guy.
You see the definition more.
He could have slid around the circle. They could have just pushed him, and he would have went a complete.
Did you guys watch the opening ceremonies?
No,
I saw a little.
Yeah,
bit,
I
very
saw bits
little
and
bits.
I was
and
going
pieces.
To, but I was busy.
I know. Some people are you know complaining about you know the political nature of the global warming thing, but I did think it was kind of cool how every athlete gets a seed that they're planting, and they're going to make a forest out of all of those seeds of Brazilian native plants.
Yeah, that is cool.
So when they walked around, they all got their seed, and they put it in there. Now, I it's part of the theme that they've got, kind of this global warming theme, but it's kind of cool to think that, you know, decades from now, there's going to be a forest of, it's going to be called Olympic Forest.
That is cool.
Yeah,
that
all
is cool.
Plants from the games.
Yeah. Were you happy overall? Because Wendy only saw a little, and I only saw a little. I saw highlights. Were you happy with the way the opening ceremonies went? Because that's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of countries. I got to Jamaica and I started fading.
You were done there.
Yeah, I couldn't stay up till the end. I saw the highlights at the end. It went off fine, right?
It's the opening ceremony, 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah,
Kevin, Rio.
That's better.
True.
That's enough. Wow, that was a third of a second.
That's you all you need.
You just broke the record. That's better.
They drew 26.5 million viewers.
That's pretty good.
A 35% decline from the record-setting audience for London's opener in 2012, where there were 40.7 million viewers.
Oh. I thought it was ironic because it's Brazilian that Gillette was such a big sponsor. I thought that was kind of cool. That was only for Ryan.
No,
Wendy.
It's funny.
I'm picking up
but
what you're putting down there.
I guess you could shave, but usually you wax.
Right.
I'll give it to you. Circle gets the square. And people can go in a circle. Look
yeah,
at that.
It all ties in. All right, we will take a quick break. Ryan has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Blame it on Rio.
I wonder if there are interesting facts about Michael Jackson in this book that we're going to talk about right now.
Possibly.
Mind blown, amazing facts about this weird, hilarious, insane world. I am all over this. Matthew Santoro, YouTuber. Can I call you a YouTuber?
Yes, YouTube content creator, whatever you'd like to call me.
Not just a YouTube creator, but a guy who's had over 700 million hits there on YouTube. That's pretty impressive, Matthew.
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
Well, after this interview, I'm sure it'll go up there in the billions, and it has. Everybody's watching your lists, and now your first book, Mind Blown, Amazing Facts About This Weird, Hilarious, Insane World. Anything about Michael Jackson in here?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? If there was, I wouldn't want to say anything bad about the man because I have actually made Michael Jackson jokes on my channel before. And let's just say he has some pretty dedicated fans that didn't take too kindly to it. So I only talk kindly about the man now. Rest in peace.
All right. Well, good.
Go on, Wendy.
I was just curious. Could you tell us how big a buttload is? Because that's really an amount.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. A buttload is an actual measurement, and people don't realize that. A buttload, I forget exactly how much it is, but it is, in fact, a measurement, and it came from a long time ago. I believe it was from the imperial system when they used to measure whiskey, which is the strangest thing. I believe it's, my goodness, it's a lot of gallons.
About 126 gallons,
oh, yeah,
according to your
go.
Book. There
yeah.
are so many but facts, see, Matthew. We know you can't remember all of them.
No, I can't. But you know what? What you just did is exactly what I hope for when I put out a YouTube video or when I, you know, when this book comes out, is that I encourage people to do their own research because there's so many amazing things in this world. And if I give you a fact, my hope is that you'll want to learn more. And that's my goal in everything I do, is to make people, intrigue people, make them want to go out and say, hey, what else is out there? And why is that the way it is? And, you know, Matt's shown me this, but why? And that's what I like to see.
Matthew, I'm going to share a story with you, and then I just saw it come to full term in your book, in Mind Blown. When my daughters were little, the highest thing they could do, like if one of them wanted to prove a point or show that they were telling the truth, they would pinky swear. They would hold their finger up in the air, and that was a pinky swear, and that meant There's no truer truism than the one I'm sharing with you now. I always thought that that was just something that five-year-old girls do, but it turns out in Japan, that's a real thing, huh?
It's a very real thing, yes. And believe me, that's probably the least strange thing that comes out of Japan. there's an entire chapter in this book that I've dedicated to Japan and the Japanese and the rather odd things that come out of that country. It would be, your mind would be blown if I'm not going to give anything away, but you got to read the chapter. It's pretty crazy.
Well, my favorite one there is the underwater roller coaster in Japan.
Yeah, that one's really cool.
It's a regular roller coaster. It starts out like a regular roller coaster, but it looks like the roller coaster is crashing into a lagoon or a lake. But what they've done is they've set up these tunnels, and the roller coaster goes underwater for a while.
I was going to say, because I think you'd drown, and that would not really be a great ride.
Right, right.
Yeah, ideally you don't like to drown on these types of things, but hey, you never know.
All right, I found an interesting fact in here about JFK, that he purchased some Cuban cigars before he signed a treaty that no one else could do trade with Cuba.
Yes, how selfish.
Or smart.
Yeah, or smart. Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, you know, it's obviously he liked his Cuban cigars and he knew what he was going to do. So it's kind of like cashing out on the stock market before you give a bad announcement.
So with all these facts, where did they come from originally, Matthew? Are you scouring the internet? Are you thinking them up? Where do they come from?
Yeah, I have a little genie on my shoulder that just whispers sweet nothings into my ear every day.
Good.
And I just put them into a YouTube video, you know.
But you have to do extensive research to make sure that what you're putting down is accurate, huh?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, I on my channel now, I've done well over 2,500 facts. And, you know, it's very necessary when you're doing all of those, especially when you come across the really strange ones, to verify them. And, you know, each fact that I find on the internet is extensively researched to make sure that it's true. I always check at least two sources. And then it gets put into a video. And then, you know, that's when people's minds get blown, because they can tune into my channel every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and know that what they're hearing is in fact true. And I put my sources in, you know, in the description of each video if people want to learn more. And that's exactly what this book is. It's exactly what I do on my YouTube channel. And it's kind of the best of the facts from a YouTube channel and some things you haven't heard yet.
Matthew Santoro on the line with us. I'm a little embarrassed to bring my iPhone into the bathroom and watch your YouTube channel, because you never know if people can actually see you out. So it's nice. This is a good bathroom book, and I mean that with the best intent.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. You know what? My goal when I made this book was to populate bathrooms all over America so that when you do your business, you just see my eyes staring back at you.
Except the book's flagged now. I'm sorry about that.
Ah, that's not good.
Oh, no. The book's flagged. Is that a Seinfeld reference?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Matthew, I know it says in here you have a chapter devoted to your favorite things, and one of them is your favorite celebrity of all time, and that would be Frank Sinatra. Frank had an interesting nickname when he was a child, didn't he?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's you're putting me on the spot now.
I'll give you a hint. It's the name of a movie with Al Pacino.
Oh, my goodness. I love how this is live. I'm totally...
Is this tough?
Listen, there are so many facts you filter through on
thousands.
A daily basis, on an hourly basis,
I'll
Matthew.
Help you through it. As a child, Frank Sinatra had scars on his mouth from complications at birth, and he was called, as a child, the other kids lovingly referred to him as Scarface.
Scarface, yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, for some reason I was thinking Old Blue Eyes, but I was like, wait, no, that's not right.
That came later.
Yeah, that came later. No, Scarface, that's right. Yeah. Yep. Isn't that crazy?
Yep.
And some of these, like I was quizzing Bill on, and you knew the answer, like this one, Bill. The person who designed the modern Frisbee was cremated after he died, and his ashes were molded into Frisbees.
Yes,
didn't
how
we
about
know that?
That? Yeah. Yeah,
isn't that creepy?
Potato chips were, according to legend, were developed by George Crumb, a restaurateur with an annoying customer who kept sending his French fries back to the kitchen, claiming they were much too soggy. Crumb wanted to shut the guy up, so he sliced the potatoes extra thin, fried them over and over, and covered them in salt. Welcome to the world, potato chip.
Right, and it's kind of funny about that one. I really like that fact, because I remember when I was researching that, I thought, this can't be true. It can't. This delicious treat that we all like can't be based off something so vindictive. But it's amazing that, you know, something out of something so strange like that, out of a story, you know, turned into something that we all enjoy.
The Beatles, one of my favorite entertainment entities of all time, broke up in a very unusual place. Do you know this one? I'm hoping you know this one.
Where they broke up?
Yeah, where were the Beatles when they decided that they would no longer be a band together?
Oh, good Lord. I was not ready for this quiz session.
That's all right. That's all right.
All guys.
Yeah, I only know, well, I already knew this, but I know it's in the book, and I want people to know more about it. The Beatles were actually vacationing at Disney World when they decided they didn't want to be a band anymore.
See, it is not the happiest place on earth.
Not
I'm
for
telling
the Beatles.
You that.
I was going to say, not so much the happiest place on earth. You know, it's funny that we're talking about this because when I research these facts and I make videos about them, I've been, you know, over the course of 6 years now, I've done well over 2,500 different facts on my YouTube channel, and I'll often get people that say, hey, remember in, you know, 50 Amazing Facts number 2, which, you know, was like 3.5 years ago,
yeah,
and they'll ask me about some obscure fact that I talked about 3 years ago, and it's funny because in a way I remember these facts, but it's more so I remember the gist of them. I don't always remember the specifics because there have been so many facts, right? So,
Yeah. You
know, when you say things like, what was Frank Sinatra's, you know, nickname as a child, I remember that he had a nickname, but unless, like, I really think about it and I'm not on the spot live on a wonderful radio show.
Or this
no
one.
Pressure, it usually comes to me, yeah.
Right. Now this one, Matthew, I trust you. I know you do research, but this is one I want you to do just a little bit more research on. It's in the book, but I'm not positive I believe it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It says Marilyn Monroe had a higher IQ than Albert Einstein. Are you positive that's correct?
I fully encourage people to Google that.
That seems hard to swallow a little bit.
And I know, but see, that's the thing about this book is that it's filled with things like that, that's probably from the chapter that can't be true, can
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my favorite chapter is because that chapter is that in the prologue. The prologue I love because it's all about my life story and it gives people a greater insight into my life and my journey from becoming an accountant all the way to going into an entertainer, a YouTuber, which is totally at opposite ends of the spectrum. But definitely my favorite chapter is the that can't be true, can it? Because it's filled with things like that are just going to make you have to Google it, and that was the entire intention of the book.
Good.
Matthew Santoro on the line with us. My kids subscribed to your channel. I just subscribed as well. And if you do, 3 days ago, Matthew posted something, 10 Unbelievable Crimes Committed by Animals. That's something you should watch. The book is Mind Blown, Amazing Facts About This Weird, Hilarious, Insane World. And Matthew, I have to tell you, this is a lovely little fact to end on. Because, you know, sometimes you wake up and your confidence is lacking a little bit. Here's a bonus fact. Other people see you as 20% more attractive than you think you are. Because when you look in the mirror, all you see are your looks, not the whole package, not your personality. So how lovely
that's
is
exactly
that?
Right.
I'm 20% hotter than I think I am right
that?
Now.
That's right. Well, but that holds so true if you think about it. I mean, how many times have you met somebody and, you know, no disrespect, but maybe they're not the greatest looking person, but you talk to them and their confidence and the way that they talk to you, they're so sure of themselves. You're just attracted to that person and you can't really put your finger on it because they might not even be your type, but you just love the way they talk and they draw you in. And so that's why that's true.
Are you playing Pokemon Go? I got to ask you that because the whole world is.
No, I'm not.
You're too busy.
No, I'm not. I'm not because I have an addictive personality, and I prefer to spend my time doing YouTube videos and being addicted to that as opposed to finding digital Japanese monsters in a cell phone game. So
you like them even more now, don't you, Bill?
Yeah, a lot more. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So nice to talk to you, Matthew Santoro. Your first book, keep us posted on the book number 2, and I hope you sell a buttload of books. That's what we're hoping for.
I love
you.
That. Thank you guys so much. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I really hope you guys enjoy the book. It's available everywhere tomorrow, Amazon, iTunes, your brick-and-mortar stores. It's a bright yellow cover. You're going to notice my bald head at the bottom. It's a nice design.
And follow his YouTube channel as well, Matthew Santoro. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matthew. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more stuff coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I tell you a little story? It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We just talked to Matthew Santoro, Mind Blown. He's got a book put together. You can follow his YouTube channel. May I share something exciting with you?
Oh, yes.
I wish this was you.
I do too, but I don't know what it is, but I wish it was.
A guy named Frank Epperson.
Who is that?
Let me tell you a little story, because really, I could substitute your name here. I wish
for
this would have been
Epperson's?
You. Yes.
All right.
While most of the kids on his there's a list of child prodigies. So most of the kids on this list celebrated for accomplishing adult tasks at an early age. Frank Epperson is here because he utilized his youthful powers of imagination and observation. Mm-hmm. He's just 11 years old. Epperson accidentally left a glass of water, powdered soda mix, and a wooden stir stick outside in the cold. The next morning, he pulled a frozen treat out of his glass by using the stick, and the popsicle was born.
Frank Epperson is the man responsible
yes.
for the popsicle.
Epperson wouldn't file a patent on his discovery for 18 years, and when he did, as a 29-year-old grown-up, he called his product Epsicles.
Epsicles doesn't seem to be as good as popsicles.
It was a bit of a lame name. Luckily for Frank.
If Iggy Pop had invented these, then you go, well, that makes sense. It's the popsicle, but the Epsicles, ridiculous.
Luckily for Frank, his child inventor genes had been passed down to his own children, who preferred to call his treats popsicles because pops.
After their pop.
Yeah. So Epsicles, it could have been Epsicles. I like Lefsicles.
Oh, that
See why I wanted to substitute your name?
Yes. Right.
I'm
that has a much better ring to it.
I'm going to call them Lefsicles from this point forward.
Now, also in the book, I'll share a very fun one with you. It talks about a robot that was developed in Japan that is the rock, paper, scissors robot. And it says here that just because of math, like if you played rock, paper, scissors 1,000 times against somebody, you would win a third of the time, you would lose a third of the time, and you would tie a third of the time. That's just the law of averages. This robot that they invented, the rock, paper, scissors robot, never loses.
How?
I can't figure that out either. How is that possible? Like, you'd go, even if you're playing against the average, you only have three options. You only have rock, paper, scissors, so sometimes it's going to lose, right?
Yeah.
I would imagine. I don't know how they pulled this off.
It's reading your brain.
It's
got to
be reading my brain. Yeah.
I guess
because it keeps short-circuiting. Steam keeps coming out of it, so I bet that's what's going on.
You don't drink coffee. I know that.
Nope.
But almost everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
There are four other listeners who I think back you up every time that comes up. King Gustav of Sweden banned coffee in 1756. He believed it was poisonous and forced prisoners to drink it.
Only prisoners can have coffee. Well, take a look at a Starbucks. That's what it looks like. Everybody just standing in line. They're prisoners.
Prisoners. Sheep, maybe.
They're prisoners,
with their names spelled wrong.
Right.
All right. Well, I like these stupid little... no one knows who invented the fire hydrant because the patent burned in a fire.
Oh.
Ironic much?
Yeah, very ironic. All right. So again, that book is called Mind Blown. It's available everywhere on Amazon tomorrow. And Matthew Santoro is the author. We'll take a quick break. We've got news and then more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
USA. USA. Congratulations to the women's basketball team.
Did they win it all? Did they win the gold?
I don't know. What'd you just say, Ryan?
They just defeated Spain pretty handily, too.
Good.
So they're rolling. The women's basketball team hasn't lost a game since 1992. So, and of course, Elena Deledon of the Chicago Sky is one of the leaders on this team. She's never won a gold before. And she says, you know, she's won MVP. She's won all of these awards. But gold medal, that's the cream of the crop in her book.
Yeah, I bet.
If our women are so good, why don't more people go see women's basketball?
Oh, that's a tough one to answer. I don't know.
Careful what you say.
You know how much I love sports.
I know.
I love sports. I've watched a couple of WNBA games, and it just doesn't work for me. I've tried so hard.
They're not gangsta enough.
You know what, though? The expectation is different. I mean, it's not the NBA, and you have to understand that they do a lot. I was talking to Kevin Paul about this a couple days ago. You know, a lot of the WNBA games, especially in the summer, are during the day.
Yeah.
They're daytime games because they bring
fair.
They bring in a lot of camps. You know, a lot of
they
camps
do.
Go. A lot of schools go.
Number
and then
one
that's
with
how they pack
camps.
It up. Yeah. Well, you know, you got to sell hot dogs somehow, right?
I'm mad at my... you do. Yeah, that's a good point, right? I'm mad at myself for not like. It's so weird because I want to like it, and I've sat through a couple games, and I just say,
I don't
just
watch
not
men's basketball either.
But do you watch the women's college basketball? I mean, we all know how dominant UConn is, right?
Yeah.
We all followed Tennessee for. DePaul's got a great women's
basketball program.
Do you watch college basketball at all, Bill?
No, I've watched three or four WNBA games, and not in their entirety, because even.
And college basketball, do you watch? Because I don't.
No, I don't watch men's or women's college basketball at all.
They haven't arrived to greatness yet.
Well, you know, a lot of people have said those guys care more about the game than the pros. And there's something to that.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you could say that about almost all college athletes. You know, there's more. I don't know what it is. It's more real to them than the guys who know if I win or lose, it doesn't matter. I'm going to make a lot of money.
But doesn't it matter where you went to school? Like Columbia didn't have a basketball team.
Our basketball program was not good at Columbia College. No,
I went to ISU only for a semester and a half. And so Triton College, I bet they do have a team.
I think they do.
I think they do. Not into it.
Doesn't do it for you. No. All right, the music that you heard earlier, the creepy music, there's a reason behind it. You and I have had this story. This story comes down the pike about once every 9 months or year, once a year.
Can we play that creepy music again, Kevin, when you get a minute? Because we got all about the USA.
It'll put you in the mood. It'll put you in the mood for the story.
All right.
All right, so again, I'm going to tell you this. This is not the first time we've reported on this story, and I'm positive it's not going to be the last time we've reported on it. Once again, for the third time in as many years, there's a bizarre clown, somebody dressed as a clown.
Isn't that an oxymoron, bizarre and clown?
Yeah, I guess I could have. I didn't need to
say
bizarre.
Clown.
A clown, and I think it's understood that the clown will be bizarre. I also want to correct myself. I said a clown or someone dressed as a clown. Let's be honest, that's the same thing too, isn't it? If you're a clown, you dress like a clown.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the story, and this is in our neighboring state, Wisconsin, which is just above us. It's floating above
Cheesy
us, Wisconsin.
The clown?
Cheesy the clown. The clown that bowls.
And the squirting flour, it's not water. It's that spray aerosol cheese. I would like that clown.
That would be a great clown to have.
Cheesy the clown.
In the last few days, the home of the Green Bay Packers NFL team has been packed with news about a mysterious and very creepy-looking clown roaming the streets in the dead of night. The first sightings happened on Monday around 10 a.m., according to a Facebook page called Gags the Green Bay Clown. Since then, at least seven other photos of the mysterious clown have been taken, mostly in the same area. The Facebook page seems to be as mysterious as the clown himself. It gives no clues as to why the clown was called Gags. A message to the page went unreturned. Wow, they were diligent in their homework and trying to find out the name. I sent him an email. They didn't send me an email back. It's a mystery. WBAY-TV, The Bay, described,
For Green Bay, yes.
Yep. Described Gags' look as more Pennywise than Ronald McDonald. That's the clown from It, from the Stephen King novel It. His outfit, this is the best part, Wendy. Listen to this part. Tell me if it wasn't already creepy enough, this part makes it creepier. His outfit appears shabby. And he's carrying black balloons. I don't know what it is about the black balloons, but to me that hits home
for some
weird reason. Green Bay police are getting calls.
He should have yellow and green balloons.
For the Green Bay Packers. Yeah.
Dumb clown.
Yeah.
Right. Or if he's scary, he should be wearing a Bears jersey.
That's true, too.
Spoken like a true Green Bay fan.
That's true, too, Kim. Green Bay police are getting calls. Yeah, hey there. There's a clown scaring us with the black balloons there, hey. But there's not much that can be done. Oh, the Green Bay police have just given up on it. What can we do there, yeah, hey?
There.
We threw milk at him. A person.
What is that
I don't know why they would do it. It's the dairy state. I don't know why they would throw milk at a clown. A person can walk down the sidewalk dressed however they please as long as they're in place and can be legal.
They're not hurting people.
Right. And they're not in a place that has a closing time like a park. So a street doesn't have a closing time. You can walk in the middle of the night with black balloons.
You can wear whatever you want.
Yeah.
Look how you dress sometimes.
Look at me. You think this would be allowed in Green Bay? I don't think so. Some people have speculated that the clown is part of a viral marketing stunt.
For what?
Fear. We're trying to promote
cheese curds.
Right. The winning combination of cheese curds and fear. The Facebook page appeared about an hour after Gags' first sighting, lending credence to that theory, according to the Chicagoist.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Does Kristen McQuarrie know anything about
this? Kristen, what do you know about this?
This is all news to me.
Oh.
But you know what? You know, here's my question. This is a really deep thought, so brace yourselves. If you're a Green Bay Packer fan and you wear the cheese head, it's orange, right? The slice of cheese. But it has holes cut in it to look like Swiss.
Right.
So what the heck?
I don't know
Figure out your cheese, Wisconsin.
Know
is
your
it
cheese.
Cheddar or is it Swiss? Because you're being very misleading.
All right, Kim, would you like to address
it? Well, it's actually yellow. It's gold.
It's not orange?
It's not really orange. It's gold. So we
have to clarify cheese have the bubbles that Swiss cheese has, the holes?
It looks like someone's nibbling at it, right? More than holes, it looks like somebody's taking a little bite here and a little bit.
I think it's supposed to look like Swiss.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Wrong color.
But I guess maybe the yellow is just so that it
stands out more?
Well, it matches your jersey and your outfit.
Oh.
It's just wrong.
All right. It is wrong.
I am so with you.
And it's bright like your hunting suit. So when you wear your wedge and your hunting suit, then you're definitely not going to get hit.
That's good. All right. We need to take a break. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune, and we'll talk about a number of other things. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's our 80s dance party, which, by the way, Terry Nunn from Berlin is going to be in the studio with us at 2:05 this afternoon. Can't wait to see her.
I'm looking forward to that. Kristen McQuarrie is here of the Chicago Tribune. We were talking about one scary thing, the clowns of Wisconsin. Now let's talk about another scary thing, and that is the governor's being in jail here in Illinois. We're used to that, I guess. There's a whole prison that could have been filled up on our former governors. Rod Blagojevich.
Hello, Governor.
Hello, Governor. Rod Blagojevich is asking for some time to be shaved off of his sentence.
Right. So he was convicted on a number of counts, five of which were tossed on a technicality. They were not thrown out because he was innocent of those counts. But an appellate court did throw them out, so it makes him eligible for resentencing, which is going to happen tomorrow, in front of the same judge that sentenced him initially to 14 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would anticipate the judge changing his mind.
How come not a change in judge?
I don't know if this is the way it has to go because he heard the original case. I think you would want it to be back with the same judge because he knows the case so well and knows the counts and ruled on it.
Unless you're Blagojevich's team and then you wanted
a new one.
A different judge,
right? I'm sure they tried, but
where's Judge Judy? Get her.
Judge Reinhold.
Let's get someone a little
bit. Good.
He'd be better.
I love Judge Reinhold.
This judge was very, I mean, the day he was sentenced, so this was he was tried twice. You might remember the first case ended almost in a mistrial. He was only found guilty of lying to the feds.
Yeah.
So the feds retried him and made the, you know, simplified the case and really just stuck to the fact that he tried to sell the Senate seat. The only thing that might weigh into the judge's mind is since this has all occurred, Rod Blagojevich's brother wrote a book about the heavy hand of the feds in this case, and they ended up dropping all charges against Robert Blagojevich. So he can make a very strong case that when the feds want to get you, they're going to get you. And it's almost kind of scary, the sort of power that they have.
Yeah.
And if for some reason the judge weighs in, you know, just the idea that it was a very heavy-handed case, they did have to try him twice. He's, I think, 4.5 years into a 14-year sentence. Maybe the judge would take liberty to cut him a little break, you know, maybe shave like 3 or 4 years off.
That's substantial.
And you know, I go back and forth between, you know, feeling like he got really the book thrown at him for all of the public corruption that we've had to deal with. He sort of was the one who had to pay the price. He was sort of the fall guy. On the other hand, I was covering him all those years. He ran as a reformer. He promised, you know, he wasn't going to do some of these stupid things, such as not giving a state, you know, grant to Children's Memorial Hospital until he got a $50,000 campaign contribution from the hospital president. You know, that was sort of how he operated. He
and that wasn't even vague, right? That was kind of almost word for word from what you just said. If you give me this, I'll give you this, right?
Yes. I mean, there was a conversation because he was recorded. And I'm, like Wendy was saying earlier, if every politician was recorded, we'd have a lot more indictments. But because it was on tape, he was basically saying, you know, let's hold up releasing this state money. Did you get the money? Did you get the campaign contribution from him yet? And that's exactly what George Ryan went to jail for, basically, was leveraging state assets to further your campaign. You cannot cross the two. Mm-hmm. And Blagojevich continued to do it. He did it with the road builders. He did it with the Chicago Tribune. He did it with people who were had contracts with state government. If you wanted a contract, he was going to try to, you know, get a $25,000 campaign contribution from you. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. And he promised, he said over and over, and the lie that he was caught in the first trial that they pinned him on was he kept, during his interviews with the FBI when they were first investigating him, he always talked that there was this wall of separation between the campaign side and the government side. There wasn't. It was so porous, it was like a sieve. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't do one thing without the other with him. And while we know that campaign contributions are meant to buy access, they are not supposed to be used to, you know, actually restrict or leverage state business.
So 15 years is what he got, or 14?
14. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just seems like a stiff sentence.
It was. I mean, it was quite shocking when the sentence came down. At the time, I think people were feeling less sympathetic to Rod Blagojevich than they are now. And we have all these stories. So at sentencing, we'll hear about what a good prisoner he's been. And I have no doubt. I mean, I met him many times.
Very charismatic. Very nice.
Sure. You can see him in prison. Kind of. He was always very optimistic. And he started a rock band. And he's teaching history lessons to these prisoners. You know, maybe that will weigh into the judge's decision, but I would be surprised. You know, they really did want to send a message, and they did.
Won't they also play on the emotions of the fact that he's got two small children at home, and boy, if there's ever a time they would need their dad, it's during their formative years, and to take him away from his little kids is an awful thing. That'll play a little bit too, won't it?
It will. They tried that. They've tried that since the time he was indicted. I mean, I don't know if you remember stories of, like, Patty Blagojevich brought the kids to court a couple of times, and one of them, you know, she would bring, like, sippy cups, mm-hmm. even though they were 7 years old mm-hmm. at the time, and people picked on her for that. I don't pick on her for that, but I think if that argument were going to make a difference, we would have seen that in a lesser sentence the first time around.
Yeah.
Because now he's got a daughter who's, I think, in her third year of college.
They grew up very quickly without him.
I mean, he's missed out on a lot. There's no question.
You know, I'll always remember whenever he was interviewed, and if you'll remember during those waning days before he was incarcerated, the press was almost always camped out by his house, and he would, from time to time, address them in front of his house. And he would always say the same thing. He'd say, when you hear the tapes, that'll exonerate me. Wait till you hear the tapes.
What a goof.
But then in reality, when you heard the tapes, that's what hung him. It's the same tapes that he said will free him. That's what ended
he
up fighting
forgot,
him.
Bill.
Is that what it is? I don't know.
We didn't hear all the tapes. And I think what, and this is just my conjecture, but I think what you would have heard if we heard all of the conversations were lots of conversations with Blagojevich and his lawyer trying to make sure, is this legal? Is this legal? Can I do this? Can I do this? I think his legal team very much failed him along the way, as while he was governor, he would go get advice, you know, can I take this campaign contribution and do this? And I think that's what you would hear. And I think you would also hear that in many cases, he was trying to, you know, beat Mike Madigan at his own game, not criminal. Yeah. You know, he was trying to expand kid care, and he thought maybe we would hear more about the more noble reasons for why he did what he did. I think that would probably be on the tapes, but we didn't hear all of them.
What do you anticipate his future is once he is out of jail? What he can't get back into politics. Rock star? Will he be a rock star?
Radio talk show host.
Radio talk show host.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, he...
And isn't that punishment enough that he'll never be able to be in politics again? I know the 14 years. I'm not saying go easy on him, but his biggest sacrifice is he'll never be able to be in politics again.
Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, I don't think being convicted of federal crimes, you could be a Cook County board member, I think, and still be a convicted felon. Yeah. Most other offices you can't. But he'll be talk show host, speaker, seminar speaker. These guys don't, you know, they land on their feet.
Kristen, we just got a text from Marion Barry saying, I'm sure he'll rebound in politics. He'll be
right,
fine.
Exactly. See?
He'll be absolutely fine. What do you anticipate happening tomorrow? You think they'll shave any time?
I would bet that the judge will shave 2.5 years. Just to give him a little bit, you know, based on the fact that these counts were tossed, it was a technicality, but they were tossed, so he does not face as many counts as he originally did. The judge could sort of save face by giving him a little bit of a break, but still keeping it a pretty stiff sentence in place.
That's hardly worth it, in my opinion.
Well, except if you're in prison, and I've seen prison movies where they count the days and they put slash marks on the side of the cell wall.
Have you seen the one where they dig the hole?
Yeah, I saw that one too. That's a good one. So give him a big poster of Lana Turner and let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
I guess.
Two and a half years would be that. You go, wow, I just saved. I mean, that.
How long has he been in? Four and a half years he's been serving, which is, that's a long time.
That is a long time. I say the judge makes it an even 10 and he's out.
Oh, yeah?
You think? And then, I mean, like you said, he still has a long time to serve after that. I'm just curious if people feel that their views of him have softened over time, or if there is still that contingent of people saying, you know, no, he
we trusted you.
We trusted you. You were supposed to be this reformer. And as soon as you got in there, you were just shaking people down.
Right.
You know, that's kind
of... Plus, the prison system needs those cells for other governors from the state of Illinois. They can't. They got to have an opening somewhere,
right? Or you know what? The judge might just say, "You're doing such a great job in prison, educating all these people and starting the Rock Band. We're going to keep you there because
you're valuable.
It's a
great
role for you.
Great entertainment there.
Oh yeah, always.
And so the hearing is tomorrow.
Yes,
Rich Lankoff from Legal Face Off, our show's attorney. Let's just say will be at that hearing tomorrow. So we'll find out what happened. Are you going as well?
I don't know if I'm going to go. But I will follow it. They don't allow cameras in the federal court, mm-hmm. so I'm not sure if I'll go.
Verna, what's her name? Verna Sadak is going to be doing all
the sketches.
Yeah.
Yep.
It'll be interesting.
That'll be nice. Kristen, thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. Read her whenever you get a chance. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I lost a bet with myself just now. I was sure that Kevin, our producer...
Oh.
And the musical director was going to bump in with the song Blame It on Rio, which we played, some would say overplayed, in the first half of the show.
I got to hear it, Kevin.
Kevin, do you have just a little bit of Blame It on Rio for the kids? Here it is. It's not beautiful, this is.
Crazy.
What if our hearts got a little bit hazy? Blame it on Rio.
I'm told that in the newsroom it's become like a dance club every time we play this.
Well, it's stuck in my head because I was listening to you guys on my drive to work, and every time I hear it, I'm like, blame it on Rio.
Isn't that awful? That's such an awful song. Horrible, horrible
song.
Probably
the worst song I've ever heard.
It's right up there. It would be right up there.
I can't think of one
that's
worse.
Well, there's not a lot of choices about Brazil, you know?
That's true. That's true. A quick Olympic story, because we are your Olympic station. We will talk Olympics with you. Did you hear about this guy? He's a swimmer for Canada. His name is Santo Candarelli, and he has a very interesting ritual before he swims. Do you know what Santo Candarelli does before he plops himself into the pool?
I do know, so let me just guess. Does he tug on his ear?
No, you're thinking of Carol Burnett.
Oh.
Carol Burnett did that.
That was acting, because I know what it is.
Santo Candarelli, he how do I say this politely?
The one-gun salute.
The one-gun salute. He flips off. In actuality, it's his dad, but to just look at him, you wouldn't know he was doing that. He holds the middle finger up as a way of relaxing himself.
And to give a little shout-out to his dad,
Joseph, yeah.
Which, you know, a lot of times I doubt my ability to parent. We all do our best. And it would be nice to have a little shout-out from one of my kids if they should ever make it to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is seeing that, too, and I don't think that's a good one to have.
When I was a kid, I don't know how much of the story I need to tell you. I'll just tell you the basics. My mom was upset with me about something, and she was yelling at me, and I thought it would be funny, while she was yelling at me, to just hold up the middle finger to her, which I did. And it made her laugh very hard because she didn't know what it meant. She just thought I was being, like, what's wrong with my own son? While I'm yelling at him, he's just holding it. What's wrong with him?
You got away with everything because your mom trusted you about everything.
Yeah,
that was her
first
mistake.
That was her downfall. So she thought that was adorable. And then once explained what that meant,
she
didn't know
adorable.
How to react to that, right? So then over the years, anytime I was near a celebrity, back when I did stand-up or like when I did TV or movies or anything, I would take a picture of me and the celebrity flipping off my mom, and our refrigerator door was covered with those photographs of me with celebrities just flipping off my mom.
That's not even you.
What do you mean?
Do something that
drastic?
You're not that kind of guy.
Yeah, that's true. Can I tell you what the best one was? When I was shooting Major League in Milwaukee, I had the entire stadium flip off my mom. So there's a picture of the stands, the outfield bleachers, with thousands of people all flipping off my mom.
Good work.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
But the Olympics, everybody, you know, like you're saying, oh, my son, he's swimming. And then you say, hey, you got to watch. Check him out. And then all of a sudden you see this kid flipping off the camera. You're thinking, boy, that's disrespectful.
Right.
So maybe for, you know, stand-up comedy, it was great. But for the Olympics, maybe
it's out of place.
An A-OK or maybe a thumbs up.
Well, here's the story behind it. This is on Huffington Post. For a guy who spends a lot of time in water, Canadian swimmer Santo Condorelli, cool name, by the way.
Yes.
Is getting known for his birds, but not the flying kind, the kind you flip at other people, usually in anger. Before every race, Condorelli, age 21, flashes his middle finger to his dad, Joseph. The elder Condorelli dutifully flips back a bird of his own. See, that's a loving father and son. The son flips off the dad. The dad says, yeah, all right, here's one back at you.
Can I just tell you I want to party with these people?
The Condorellis?
Yeah.
Even their name has a bird in it.
A condor.
Condor.
Jeez, that's stretching it.
Yeah, it is. The bizarre pregame ritual started when Condorelli was just 8 years old. Wendy, what is cuter than a little 8-year-old boy flipping somebody off?
You remember that meme that had gone viral of a little kid, is he wearing a Ditka jersey or something?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about? A little
Ditka.
Blonde kid?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the best picture ever. And that kid's under 8.
Yes.
The
bizarre pregame ritual started when Condorelli was just 8 years old, competing in swim meets against older and faster swimmers. His dad said, you've got to build your confidence yourself and say, blank everybody else that you're racing. Santo told the Canadian press, my dad said, every time you're behind those blocks, just give me the finger and I will give it back to you.
That's kind of sweet.
In a very weird way, it is kind of sweet. It seems to have worked since Condorelli is now fulfilling his Olympic dream. He'll be racing on Sunday in the freestyle relay, and then on Tuesday in the 100-meter freestyle, and then on Thursday in the 50-meter free. As you might expect, not everyone sees Condorelli's flip-off to his pop as a touching gesture from father to son or son to father, like the time the TV cameras accidentally picked up the gesture. You could see where...
I just said that.
Yeah, that would be a problem, right?
Right, but I'm starting to feel better now because, again, don't judge other people.
Yes, that's the message in this. I was looking at my father, and then I gave him the finger directly right at the camera, he said, and so I had to write an apology.
To the Olympic Committee?
You know, it doesn't say that. I'm curious who did... Who got that apology? Who did he send that to? I don't know that. That's a great question. Is it to...
Well, that's what I mean. It sends a bad image, like you're kind of...
flippant.
In a word.
Yeah.
But it's like you're not respectful of these games that you have worked so hard to... It's kind of like, screw this.
That's true. Yep. I was looking at my father and I gave him the finger. I had to write an apology. The Condorelli's personal ritual is meant in a loving way... But the middle finger has been considered an insult by most people for centuries.
Well, duh.
But the Olympics goes back centuries. So in a way, he's paying tribute to the time-honored tradition that is the Olympics.
I believe in the first Olympic Games.
Somebody did it.
Roman numeral I.
Right, Roman numeral I.
Somebody flipped it off, and that's to benefit the Roman numeral I. That should be an event. Oh, I'd win.
I think you would. We'd be on the team. You'd be the anchor of the team.
Yes, I would.
But you'd see a lot of cab drivers competing, I think, in that.
I don't know.
A lot of New Yorkers.
I don't think people do it in their cars anymore.
It's too dangerous.
It is too dangerous. At the Olympics, not so much.
It's one of the most ancient insult gestures known, said anthropologist Desmond Morris. I can't even think of what would be in second place. Other than the flip-off, what other ancient gesture are we still using? Maybe that thing, did you ever see the thing with the eye that people do where they hold out the bottom part of their eye?
No.
Did you ever see that?
Not unless you're being tortured. Where do people do that?
I think, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think that's based in Italian roots. I think that's an Italian thing, like the evil eye, like somebody will just stare at you and they'll move the bottom of their eyelid down. You've never seen that before?
No, and being half Italian, I know there's a symbol for it, malocchio, which is giving someone a curse and the evil eye, but I've never seen anyone...
You've never seen anyone do that?
...pull their eye down.
Yeah, they like stare at you and they move the bottom part of their eye down. I've seen that a few times.
In what movie? Goodfellas?
I've seen it on the, you know, I live on the streets, Wendy. I'm a person of the streets, and that's where I've seen it. So this guy, Desmond Morris, then said the middle finger. Oh, I can't say this part.
Uh-oh.
Now that's where it ends. The story ends there. There's no more to the story, I tell you.
Well, can we take a quick call?
Yeah.
Dave, there's no more story, so we go live to you.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great show, guys.
Thank you.
Me and my daughter have been doing this for cats. She played stock while all her life from 7 to college and everything. She had free ride. When I sit in the stands, it was an offense. She used to walk by me, sneak the lip, give me the finger a little bit. I give her. We're so close.
What did other parents think of this, though, as your young daughter was flipping you off?
They never said nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. I usually stay out on the outfield. So she don't want to hear me. I scream, you know, like all parents, they do for the kids. Once in a while, I come by the stands and everything. She looks at me. She's back. She turns around, just sneaks it. And I see her. I whistle real loud. And she looks out there, and I sneak it. And it was just, it's a sense of between me and her. Me and her.
Sure.
It's a joke between me and her. We're so close. It's unbelievable, you know. We're so close. I've been with her all night. I've never missed a softball game and everything. And it's just a joke. People are too touchy now, you know. You look at them. You look at somebody, they take offense to that. You know, people got to lighten up, enjoy life. Life is too short to be too touchy about everything, you know.
So lighten up and flip people off,
lighten
Dave.
Up
thank you.
And flip people off, Wendy. I'm trying to think of other ancient symbols other than the finger. There's the one where you crank your arm, like you punch the bottom part of your arm. You don't actually use the finger in that one, but it's the same. I think it's the same
right.
feel, isn't it? I'm trying to think of how else to describe it.
Yeah.
Right? It's got the same message, but you don't actually need to use your middle finger for that. It's just the punching movement.
Yeah, but it also involves...
That
your
hand
fist.
Is right.
I think that's a little worse. There's also, you know, biting your finger like
I haven't seen that one in a long time, but that one's been around for a long, long time. These are classics. These are the classic insults.
You know what Jim and the boys do? Like whenever, like at Disney, they do this if we're waiting in line. There was one time Michael was setting up his guitar and Jim was in the audience, and Jim just goes, "Woo." And then the kids will go, woo, back to you. So we don't, it's an audible thing
it's
more than
audible.
A visual thing. And it's kind of funny, like, if they're trying to communicate with one another, just kind of knowing, I'm here, you're here. They go, woo, and they answer back. It's pretty funny to see.
It's almost caveman-like.
I know, but they don't include me in anything.
But
I'm
you
the
know
only
the words
girl.
To that one. That one's easy to
I know, but I
decode.
Do it, and they look at me and laugh.
You
they're like, you're
that.
Not part of this, Mom.
That's not nice.
I know. Woo. Ooh.
How long does that go on for?
Just a couple times.
Okay, good.
They just, you know, they
all
identify.
Because after half an hour of that,
no,
I'd
no,
be
no.
worried.
Jim, one of them does it, and then the other two
they
answer. So there's
that.
Only three,
oh, three
woos.
Okay.
And then I did it once. We were in line at Disney, and I went, woo. And they just looked at me. They said, you're not a
you
part of this.
You can't play the woo game. Wow.
Fine, I'm not a caveman.
That's right. You win that one then.
Ugga, ugga.
Right. That teaches them. All right, a quick break, and then if you'd like to jump in, please do at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Going home, my baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I got to spend.
Kim, thank you very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder with you. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in. A man has written what is being called the greatest letter ever to a newspaper. The man's name is Terry Vaught. He is a Floridian. He lives in Tampa Bay, Florida. And he wrote a short letter to the Tampa Bay Times that many are saying is the most clever and well-worded letter of all time. Can I read it to you?
Yeah, I wonder what it's about.
Well, I will tell you this, and I think most people would know this anyway, but I think it shows that good, bad, or indifferent, our society is now being influenced by Donald J. Trump. I think this shows once and for all that you might love him and you might hate him, but no matter how you feel about him, it shows that we are being influenced by him and his personality. Here is the letter. Again, he wrote this just the other day to the Tampa Bay Times, and he writes... Isn't that what you? I think that's what you would say in a
yeah,
situation like this.
It was just funny.
And he writes. That's. The, I think that's the way you preface
that
something like this. I think
you were like a real reporter.
Yeah,
there.
I felt like a reporter.
That was good.
I did. I felt
or
like
Frazier Thomas.
I felt like one of them. I don't know. Here's what he writes, Terry Vaught. I write fabulous letters. If you read all the letters I have written, you would agree. You would love them. Other letter writers are weak and soft and out of touch. I'm not like that. And I'm sure if you're reading this, you aren't either. This paper really needs great letters, and I am awesome at letter writing. Other letter writers might attack me, but then they go away. They don't have what it takes to keep writing great letters. I have what it takes to write the best letters. Letter writers who disagree need to be punched in the face and then run out of town. I guarantee this letter will be picked as the letter of the month. If it isn't picked, it will prove that this letter writing contest is rigged. Terry Vaught of Florida.
That's a pretty great letter.
That's a great letter. It is so in the Trump style. You can't be more Trumpian than that letter is.
It really is Trumpian.
I love the way, and we won't spend the segment bashing Trump, but the more I see him, the more it becomes apparent that he's got this defense mechanism that whenever anybody says or writes anything bad about them, he immediately discredits them. He says, well, sure, that guy said something bad about me, but he works for a network that'll probably go out of business soon, and his show will be canceled anyway. So let him say it. It's always,
and he's stupid.
And he's also stupid and fat, too, and he's ugly. So, and his hairline's receding, and his wife doesn't love him. He just throws that stuff in there. It's like, here's a little bonus for why he's bad at what he does. But I'm great, and I have a lot of friends, and I'm popular, and I have buildings.
It's just surprising me how the wheel's completely coming off.
Sure, sure.
I mean, he could do no wrong before Donald Trump, anything he said, and there are just some things.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for
him.
Yeah, yeah.
It really has.
One other quick thing from the world of newspapers. This is a crazy story out of New Jersey. A man died, and because he had not just a wife, but also a girlfriend while having a wife, they had to print up two separate obituaries for the guy. Do you know this? Two versions of a New Jersey man's obituary have appeared together in a newspaper, one saying that he is survived by his wife, the other saying that he is survived by his girlfriend. Both obituaries in the press of Atlantic City agree that Leroy Bill Black, who lived in Egg Harbor Township, died on Tuesday of lung cancer, and that was caused by fiberglass exposure. However, the obituary with top billing says that he is survived by his loving wife. And I'm going to put the word loving in italics after she hears about the second obituary. The second announcement, right beneath the first one, with the same photograph of the man who had died, Leroy Bill Black, says that he is survived by a son, a host of siblings, and his longtime girlfriend. A person who answered the phone at the Green Ridge Funeral Home, which is handling all the arrangements, wouldn't comment on the two obituaries and would only say that the funeral home works at the discretion of his wife. How about that?
See, that just doesn't seem right. If you're having an affair with somebody and they die, will you let them die in peace?
No, is that directed toward the longtime girlfriend? Except, and I agree with you, but if you're her, you say to yourself, oh, I've been with this guy for a long time.
But he's married.
Yeah, there's that. There's definitely that. There's definitely that. Now, does she attend the service? Because how awkward will that moment be?
Well, you don't introduce yourself as his girlfriend.
I'm his longtime girlfriend.
Perhaps I'm a good friend of his, and I wanted to pay my respects.
I'm trying to think of what the most tactful way to do it is, because you know as soon as she walks in, first of all, the wife is going to have a conniption, as we like to say in the 1930s.
A conniption and getting balled out.
That's right.
We are really back into
the 1950s. Keeping the English language alive. So as soon as his longtime girlfriend comes through the doors, all of a sudden, how hot is that room going to get?
Well, not if they don't know. I'm sure they're aware of each other.
They are now. If they weren't until the obituary, they are now.
Yeah, but how did the other obituary come out? Because the funeral home said that we are...
Operating at the discretion of his wife.
So why would they post the girlfriend obituary, too?
All right. It's a great question, and it piggybacks my question, which is this. When you have an obituary printed, you pay for that, right? That costs money, doesn't it?
In the paper, I believe it does, but usually you write it through the funeral home because you're there picking out caskets. And
it's part
then,
of the package.
I think so. I can't
Isn't
remember.
It?
I'm trying to think when my mom died. And
I'm trying to remember, too. There's so much going on during that moment that or moments that you don't really think about what's what, but I'm almost sure.
I think that's part of the deal. And then
throw in the obituary.
Well, they help you write it, and then there is a fee to go in the newspaper, but that comes out of like your bill that
right.
you're gonna. The worst thing though is, you know, trying to pick out a casket for your mom because you don't want to go the cheapest route,
right?
But you don't want to waste the money on the most expensive line. So you're there with your siblings, going, "Okay, we can't get the cheap one because mom will haunt us the rest
right.
of our lives."
Right.
So that's the weirdest thing. So at that point, when you're writing out an obituary, you're just
you're
in
worried
a daze,
about other
you
things.
Know.
Yeah, you're worried about other things. But somebody had to okay the second version of the obituary. Like, the first one is standard. You're going to mention all the family members. But somebody had to pony up a couple of dollars to go, hey, as long as you're throwing in an obituary, here's a second version that we need in there, too. So who paid for that?
Well, she probably did, but that's
the
just...
wife, the ex-wife, or the former wife, or the girlfriend?
Are they ex-wife, or is this his current
it's still
wife?
Current wife.
All right. Well, so...
Survive, because it says... He's survived by his wife.
Well, that's what she said. You could write anything. He loved me more than anyone in the world.
Yeah, but if they weren't still married, you would have said survived by a former wife
right.
or ex-wife.
So she should get the say-so, and the girlfriend should stay out of it.
Yeah, you'd think.
That's terrible. God, let the guy die in peace. Maybe that's why he's dead.
It's easier. At some point, he went, I can't keep this charade on forever.
Exactly.
I'm just going to stop breathing and teach them a lesson.
I'm sick of them having conniptions.
Yeah, no more conniptions.
They're bawling me out.
Yeah.
Hi, David.
How are you? Great okay. show.
Thank you.
My dad worked with a gentleman, and he had two wives, and until his funeral, neither one knew about the other one.
Wait, two wives simultaneously?
Yes.
Which one were you from?
Well, I grew up in southern Illinois in a little town called Bethalto, but my dad worked at a refinery in Wood River. And the guy claimed that he had a farm, and he would go spend 1 week at what he was saying was with his wife, and then he would come back and spend another week with the other one.
Wow. And nobody knew until he died.
No, nobody knew. And at the funeral, both wives showed up, and one looked at the other one and said, "Who are you?" And she said, "Well, I'm Mrs. So-and-so." And the other one says, "Well, I'm Mrs. So-and-so."
Oh, no.
I bet hilarity yeah. did not ensue.
No.
No. It's a true story.
And this was your dad?
Yeah, no, my dad worked with a guy.
Oh,
it wasn't my dad.
I'm sorry. I thought you said your dad.
No. He worked with somebody that did
wow.
dad.
All right.
That's
yeah, imagine
insane.
Imagine how strange that'd be.
Yeah, because I would think that might taint the ceremony just a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who does the speaking, you know?
Well, yeah.
If you have a little, you know, somebody wants to say a few words, do you
well,
have them both get up there and fight it out?
Even that reception line becomes weird because all of a sudden you got a fork in the road at the reception line going, well, I know that wife and that kid. I got to go to the left or to the right. That would be crazy.
I just don't understand people. And, you know, forgive me, I know you love your wife, but, you know, a lot of men say, oh, yeah, she's the boss, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Do you guys want two bosses? Isn't
no.
it hard enough sometimes having one?
Right.
Just keep a girlfriend on the side. Don't get married to two different people.
You know, every once in a while a story comes about some guy who travels quite a bit and has a family
secret life.
In some other city. How do you do that? How could you possibly... Because isn't every moment, like every moment of my life is accounted for. My wife could never go, I don't know where he was from 3 to 5 o'clock on Thursday. She knows where I am. I could never pull off a second family. I can barely pull off a first family. How could I pull off two families?
Well, now you can track phones and stuff so easy.
Right.
There's no
yeah.
way it could happen anymore.
Kim, it's still, every once in a while you still hear about
well,
a guy.
Well, that's true, but I think it would be a lot harder now, don't you think?
Oh, way harder.
Kathy, we were talking about this man who had a girlfriend and a wife, and what do you think about this?
Well, I was, first of all, I love you guys.
Oh,
you keep me
you.
Laughing all the time.
Thanks,
but,
Kathy.
I was going to say, sort of what the last guy said, that I have heard of this where the wife and the girlfriend or the two wives or whatever, they honestly do not know about each other. And I would have to say that you would think, I don't know anything about the story, you would think the wife would have to kind of know unless she's really in denial
right.
or kind of naive. But the girlfriend really may not know. I mean, we don't know the specifics. But you know what you were just saying about keeping track of when? How did someone afford that?
Right.
That's what I wonder. How do you
a
afford
a second
that?
Family?
Yeah, I can barely. How do you support one family
right.
nowadays? Much
yeah.
less two.
Really, one's enough. I mean, really.
I mean,
in many ways, one is enough.
Oh, in many ways, but just financially alone. I look at like some of these like sister wives shows or something. It's like, oh my God, all these kids,
yeah,
and the houses, and geez, we can barely afford to go out for dinner, pay for one family's groceries or house.
So double
or
that. Good luck. That's
or
impossible.
Whatever trip, yeah, geez. But so because I think Wendy made a comment about the girlfriend should like stay away, which in general I agree with. But she really genuinely may not have known, you know.
I bet she knows.
I always think if someone's having, because it even says here, longtime girlfriend. I always think if somebody's having an affair, the wife has to know. There's
girlfriend has to know there's a wife.
Oh, without a doubt.
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So maybe they all deserved each other. I don't know.
Right. That's the truest part. All right.
Thank you, Kathy.
A quick break and then more of your thoughts on this. How could a guy have either a wife and a girlfriend at the same time, or as we've just learned, multiple families in other cities? That seems a stretch. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder, and we just told you the story about a man named Leroy Bill Black. He died a few days ago. He lived out in Atlantic City, New Jersey. In the newspaper there in Atlantic City, they had not one but two obituaries, one explaining that he is survived by his wife and children, the other explaining that he is survived by his children and his longtime girlfriend.
And it seems like the girlfriend should stay out of it. We were wondering how the obituary gets written and how they work. And funeral director Eric is on the line with us. Hello, sir.
Hello, Bill. Hello, Wendy.
How are you, Eric? Good.
Eric the Undertaker at your service.
Thank
I'm
you.
Alive and well, thank you.
Good.
All right, so you pick out caskets, you help and decide what's going on. You also help write that obituary, don't you?
Right. We have a form, kind of a blank, generic
That's
form,
right.
Bill, that we just go through and, you know, once we write it out and once we get the family's approval, we fax it into, you know, whatever newspaper. And they come back with what we call lines and charges and say, this is how much it's going to cost. You know, it's going to run for 1 or 2 days, whatever the people want. And then, you know, we proofread it for accuracy, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's part of the package with everything.
Yeah.
Right, right. It's part of our basic services. You know, if the people want it, you know, if they don't want an obituary, then, you know, they don't have to pay for it naturally. But because there is a charge from the newspaper.
Right. And business is good. People are dying to get in.
Ah.
Whee! Yeah.
You were talking about this guy with two wives. It didn't happen to me, but I saw it happen. I was at the medical examiner's office on some business, and a fire department had brought in a deceased person. And, I mean, even before he arrived, there were three women in the lobby of the morgue.
Three
arguing, and they were in the lobby of the morgue, and they were arguing over who was going to get his jewelry. Honest to goodness, true story. And they were trying to figure out who was who, and the one said, well, I'm his wife. And said, no, you're not. I'm his wife. And said, well, I don't care. I'm his girlfriend, and I bought him that jewelry, and I want it back. And it was a big mess, to say the least.
All terrible.
Right. Thank you, Eric.
Haven't there been Lifetime movies with Meredith Baxter Burney where this happens? Doesn't this happen quite often to Meredith Baxter Burney?
Yeah, and she's an addict sometimes, too.
Sometimes she is.
I am not an addict.
Yep.
All right, Lucy, you had an affair with a married man for a while, and did you not know he was married?
Yes, I did know, but it didn't mean we didn't set it off as an affair. We were friends, and we just fell in love, and that's the way it happened. And he had three kids, and I had one.
Yeah.
And we thought about getting together, but...
But he was married.
Yeah, and he didn't want to leave. The reason we didn't end up together is because of the kids. He said, if you leave your kid, I'll leave mine, and we could start life someplace else, and you know, but I just couldn't leave my child.
No.
Well, yeah, because you're a mother. That's good of you that you didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, I would never do that for any man. But
how long did that go on for?
18 years.
18 years.
Good. 18 years.
Golly.
He was the love of my life. He still is the love of my life. He passed away about 5 years ago, but I'm convinced that she knew.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that she knew, but she was the kind of woman that probably said, you know, you borrow him for a while, but he's mine
just
ultimately
return him.
Because I have the marriage license. Or
have him cleaned and return him to me. Did you go to the service? Did you go to his funeral?
You know, I didn't.
No.
But I sent flowers.
And how did you sign it? Just anonymously. Oh, that's sneaky.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, you know, from a friend from the company we used to work. We used to work in the same company.
Oh.
And all I made sure that the florist didn't put any of my information, and I did send a very simple flower, and I said from a friend at the old company. Mm. And
did you used to chase him around the desk?
I'm sorry?
Did you used to chase him around the desk at work, or vice versa?
No. He was a wonderful, wonderful man, and it was just one of those things that happened. It's not always, you know, the bitch and the wife trying to fight for the man's love. This was a case where it just happened. We fell in love, and he was a wonderful man. He was my friend, my pastor, my advisor, and I knew he loved me too. I know he loved me,
sure.
And but our children came first.
Yeah,
well, that's good. Sorry and, you for know, your loss. Sorry you lost him, Lucy. Your true love. Thank you for calling.
Now, wouldn't that make a great Lifetime movie with Meredith Baxter Burney and maybe Victoria Principal if she's available? I would watch that.
I'm uncomfortable. I just am uncomfortable with that stuff.
I know love happens,
but sometimes you have to walk away from love.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Here's my biggest fear in this, is that I would say the wrong name at some point to somebody.
That's when
you
date somebody with the same name.
You have to find somebody, if you're going to have an affair, find somebody with the same name as the person you're married to. That's great advice.
Can I just tell you that we would be so bad and bumbling that there's just no way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't get it. He was a great man, but he really wasn't. He said, let's leave our kids
and
go run away and start over.
Right.
And did she say he was a pastor?
Yeah, she mentioned that.
I thought I heard that. I was
man
like,
of the cloth.
Whoa, yeah.
Well, that could be... I don't know.
What kind of pastor?
I don't know what could. I'm just uncomfortable. I feel dirty. I need a Silkwood shower.
But your advice is strong. Have an affair with somebody with the same name as your wife. I'm going to bring that up to Terry Nunn, our next guest, when she comes in here and see what she says. But she's on board with that.
I bet she will be. All right.
You'll see.
I feel dirty now. I really do.
Can you just quickly take Becky? I just want to find out, because people have texted this and called us with
All right,
this.
Becky, real quickly.
Yes. Famous person, reporter, CBS Channel 2 National, Charles Carroll.
From On the Road with Charles Carroll.
And then
it
That's
was not all he was on.
Died. Two separate families, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, with children in both.
Wow.
What a cad.
And
he was on the road.
On that bus going across country doing human interest stories for years.
Sure.
He should have self-focused on his human interest stories.
Right.
How does that work?
Well, the whole topic was that he was always traveling, so if anyone could pull it off, it would have been Charles Carroll.
Oh, he pulled it off.
He pulled it off.
Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you, Becky. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Were his wife's name the same thing? Because that's a...
Mrs. Carrault. They were both called Mrs. Carrault, yeah.
You're terrible.
That's crazy.
Oh,
all right, we'll
God.
Take a quick break, and then the news, and then more coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks. And Kim, stay close by, because I think I may need you on this.
Alrighty.
Wendy, I like, you know, one of my favorite things, one of my hobbies, is to take something that could be a negative and turn it into a positive, and
that's
I think I can
you.
Do that. Is me? That's me.
And what do you call that hobby? Is there a name for that?
Turning negatives into positives. I call it. It's
very
not,
creative.
It's not as I know. I could probably spend more time on it, but I'm so busy taking negatives and turning them into positives. I don't have time to give it a clever name. There was a story Kim did in the news, and it's a sad story. A member of the Bears is out for the season. What did he do? What did he tear? I'm trying to remember.
He tore his ACL, yeah.
And that's going to cost him the whole year.
Cruciate ligament.
Yeah.
His anterior.
Whole season.
Cruciate ligament. Anterior on the outside.
Yep.
Is it ACL?
And nougat on the inside.
Posterior.
So he's going to be gone for the year. Now, this is, when you hear this, you say to yourself, well, that can't be good. But in a way, it can be good, because his position is the center. And what does the center do? What's the center's job?
To hike the football.
To the quarterback, who
Correct.
Is Jay Cutler.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Who will cost the
starting.
Bears game after game after game. So if you don't have a guy giving the ball to Jay Cutler...
So you blame the center. Jay will blame the center.
The lack thereof.
I don't... It's
you mean
not
we
even
can't
a,
play all season?
It's not even a question of blame. No, we can still play, but it's just now when we play, there won't be a guy to give Jay Cutler the ball, and I think that's a good thing. So although I don't want to see a guy get injured, that's not what I want to see. when a guy is injured, I say to myself, well, how can we make this a positive? And it means Jay Cutler. Nobody will give the ball to Jay Cutler. And that's, I think that's good.
You're Mr. Positivity. I got to be honest with you. I actually thought you were going to say the wrong guy was injured.
No, that would be mean.
Well, when have you not been mean to Jay Cutler?
That would be so mean. I just think it's in our, if you're a Bears fan, you hear this news and you go, oh no, a starter is down. But then you think about it, you go, but that's the guy that gives Jay Cutler the ball, who then gives it to the opposing team. I think we're in good shape here.
So what, do we forfeit all the games
No.
and we still come up ahead?
It's like the Hall of Fame game. Just cancel it because Right. the Bears don't have a center.
Right. Just call it a day. Just call it down. Kim, were you here 2 weeks ago when I told the story about going to the Green Bay Packers? There's a bar that my wife and I went to, a restaurant in Wisconsin, where everybody was very, very up on the Green Bay Packers and not so much on the Bears. Did you hear any of that?
Well, that's shocking to me, Bill, but that's probably every restaurant you walk into
in Wisconsin.
But yeah. Which one was it?
I purposely didn't say the name because I want to go back there. But there
Your
was
wife
a,
said the wrong answer, though, didn't she?
Yeah, they have a drink there called the Packer Punch or something like that. It's this this greenish drink that's the color of the Green Bay Packers. And my wife said, what is that drink you're drinking? And she said, a Packers Punch. And then she said to my wife, she started to approach her and said, you guys are Packers fans, right? And Terry was going to go, no, we live in Chicago. We're Bears fans. But I quickly changed the subject. Yeah, we love the Packers. Ooh, 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 I said.
Favre.
Yeah, how about that Brett Favre? How about him?
Packers fans, though, I have to say, are usually pretty nice.
Not this time.
Place. Really?
No. Those were fighting. Just to say
those
you weren't a Packers
words?
Fans in that particular establishment, I think would have cost us severely.
Ooh.
Yeah, I explained to my wife, you always, when you're in the enemy's territory, you explain to them that you are also a fan of the Green Bay Packers.
What positive could you take from that, then?
We're still breathing.
That the Packers are way better than the Bears are ever going to
yes.
be?
Yes, there's that, too. There's that little thing, too.
All right, quit trashing the Bears.
They'll be fine. They haven't lost a game all season. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back.
We got Kevin. Can we please book Jay Cutler to come in
the
studio?
Don't.
Bill, I told you, all you have to do for your positive energy is just become a Packer fan.
No,
it's really contagious.
I'm thinking about it.
No, you're not.
I am.
You're not welcome back
it.
If you make that move, Bill.
I am seriously considering it.
Kim already
That's why
was
I stay up
one.
Here on the seventh yeah. floor.
Look at the joy. On any Monday, you see the joy in Kim's face.
They, remember the joy when we beat them on Brett Favre's
yes.
Hall of Fame
yes,
night?
Yes, that
How
was
many
the
years
best
ago thing. Was that?
Last year.
Was that last year or 2 years ago?
Last year.
I thought it was 2 years.
It was definitely last year on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. On Thanksgiving.
That was joy.
I had already clocked out by then. I was already done with the season.
You got to book Jay Cutler. You got to bring these two together.
Oh, you're going to have to increase my insurance policy that day.
You know what? When you have them on, then they'll become best friends, and poor Grant Mulvey will
Don't
go
say
to the
that.
Wayside.
He's already dumped Grant Mulvey.
No, that's not
you're
true.
You're only friends with him during the hockey season.
That's not true.
Yeah, we haven't seen hide nor hair of him, have we?
We went looking for outfits for Kevin's wedding last weekend. We're
You're not
friends.
Going with him.
You don't know that. It said plus one. It could be anybody. I could bring Grant Mulvey.
All right, whatever.
All right, a break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, what's going on when you're trying to fly somewhere? First, we had problems with Southwest Airlines, who had a computer issue, and a lot of flights were grounded. Then Delta Airlines, as they have finally resumed activity, but global computer outage forced grounding of many flights. On the line with us right now is Aaron Katursky, ABC News correspondent.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. The power problem that Delta says caused the computer outage is we're not sure if it's even been fixed, but Delta's systems are back up and running. It's just now clearing the backlog that resulted all over the world.
Now, this took Southwest down for a couple of days to get back on track with all the missed flights. It's going to take a while for Delta to do the same, correct?
Although one analyst compared this to a bad snowstorm or, or some bad weather. It's not, the worst thing ever, but it is going to take a little bit of time. And we saw that reflected today out at Newark Airport, where I was, long, long line all the way down the terminal and out toward the door, and people just kind of having to wait it out with delays, 1, 2, 3, 4 hours plus.
Aaron, the way it was described was a computer outage. Is that term as accurate as it sounds? Does it just simply mean their computers wouldn't work?
Well, they say they lost power. Now, we're not exactly clear because Georgia Power, the electric company in Atlanta, said that it wasn't on their end. Delta was receiving power, and Georgia Power said it was a piece of Delta's own equipment that seems to have failed. And that suggests maybe they were doing some kind of power test at 2:30 in the morning. Maybe it was supposed to flip over to a generator or battery power, and yeah, it just didn't work out quite as planned. But it left Delta's computer systems down. And, you know, the way the computers run airlines these days, everything from, you know, checking passengers in to operating flights and the Wi-Fi on board that you're, you know, you so demand now.
Yeah.
None of that can work when these computers, I guess, went down.
Aaron, a little over a week ago, my wife and I traveled. We flew into Boston, into Logan, and the rental car place was having some sort of computer issue where they couldn't look at anything on their computer. They had to make a phone call and wait for a phone call back. And the lines were backed up so long because of this. And I thought to myself, this is just over rental cars. This isn't even an airline.
Well, and you saw today with Delta, they didn't even know who to call because they had to get into their computers to see who's on each flight.
Yeah.
You know, and so everything is automated. You know, when was the last time you actually called the airline on the phone?
Right.
Most people just do it online now. So everything is sort of running on these systems that are industry analysts say, fairly well taxed at this point. So when one little thing happens, and you'd think there should have been a backup to the backup to the backup. But when something happens, it cascaded into this worldwide outage.
And do we have any idea what caused this? This wasn't some kind of hacking scheme or something?
Delta says a power problem. So that's all we have to go on right now.
That just seems so weird, like they wouldn't have some kind of backup generator to their backup generator. It just
What you'd think. And that's why I think it left a lot of people kind of scratching their heads as to how this can happen. For whatever reason, it happened, and that's when the computers went down. And you know, we're not even sure they're fully back online yet. But the flights are taking off, at least in some fashion.
Aaron, what was the protocol in terms of people who had tickets? Were they then allowed to fend for themselves and get transfers to other airlines, or was that not an option?
For a while, the Delta was offering refunds but trying to accommodate passengers. But once flights started moving, I think the preference, at least on the airline's part, was to get things moving again and to get people on flights. So we're not sure that that's going to, you know, give people a whole lot of option other than to simply wait.
You know, what happens now is there was a time where it seemed like every flight had several open seats. Now they're all booked to capacity, so moving people around and getting them on earlier flights is almost impossible.
That's true, too. And so it doesn't give the airlines a whole lot of wiggle room to accommodate people, you know, even that want to fly standby or anything like that. So it that's why it takes a while. And so people are probably still into a whole lot of waiting. Flights are moving, but it's just slow.
Bill and I were talking about all the Delta commercials, Delta, the way to really fly. And
Delta is ready when you are.
Yeah.
That was the big one.
And
yeah.
So something that I didn't realize, I thought Delta was kind of suffering in the airline business. But as of last year, The Economist ranked Delta as the top airline carrier in the world in terms of passengers. That surprises me.
And actually had been doing pretty well in the information technology bit.
Until now.
So, you know, no airline has been thoroughly immune. You know, you mentioned Southwest, but there's been others before that. Delta just happened to catch it today. At the moment, there's no satisfying answer. You're like, wait a second. So you lose this one little gizmo, loses power, and no flight, you know, around the world can go. We had ABC's Bob Woodruff was in Beijing coming back to the States.
Yeah.
And he was there, and he's like, well, we're not going anywhere. And you're like, wait a second. A power problem in Atlanta means our guy in Beijing can't get back to the States. How is that possible? And yet, it turns out that's possible.
It just seems weird, though. Like, I guess everything is computerized. Your tickets, the no-fly list.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not like air traffic controllers are affected. It's just their whole booking system is on computers.
But it's more than booking. It's also weather and flight operations, plane weights, and all that thing. And so that's why flights that were in the air had all the routes downloaded and everything was flying. But anything on the ground was prevented from taking off.
All right. Well, Delta Airlines said limited flights have resumed, and they are advising customers to check the status of their flights before heading to the airport. Good luck.
Yeah, that may not be an easy proposition either, because the flight boards had been fairly unreliable, at least in the early part of the day. Getting a little better now, but you know, the delays seem to be fairly consistent of at least you know, an hour, two, or three.
And we don't know for sure. I think you mentioned this at the beginning, Aaron. This is the kind of thing that normally would take a couple days before it's business as usual in terms of everybody getting them, getting everybody
you know,
ready
could.
To be.
It could. I mean, this is one of the busiest travel periods. You know, a Monday for business travel, for people and pleasure trips coming coming home.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why.
Yeah.
Man, that just stinks. Like, you just have a great vacation. All you want to do is get home, and
right.
It's going to be harder than you think.
Yeah.
Thank you, Aaron.
Aaron, we appreciate it.
Good day, guys.
Have a good time. It's Aaron Kotursky of ABC News.
How's he going to have a good time?
Aaron Kotursky knows how to have a good time, Wendy. You don't think so?
No.
Come on.
We are
maybe he's having friends over later to just, you know, play wiffle ball. You don't know. I want him to have a good time.
That's so nice because you are Mr. Positivity.
I think everyone should have a good time.
Terry
except
Nunn,
Jay Cutler. I don't think he should.
Stop it with him.
Right.
Terry Nunn is in the building and we are going to talk to her. She is with the band Berlin. She is awesome. And
you have a surprise for her, by the way.
Don't set it up like
just,
that.
It's just something
that she may not want to talk about.
Oh,
so, like,
maybe
you
not.
Just kind of wait and see
right.
how it goes, and then I got right. something in my back pocket.
All right. I hope she has a good time.
Like Aaron Kotursky?
Kotursky, yes. All right, a quick break. News is next, and then maybe a surprise, maybe not, for Terry Nunn. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. This song makes me want to roller skate. Terry, you'll forgive me, but
Terry,
if I start to roller
studio.
Skate, it's because this song has inspired me.
It was big.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Terry. How are you? Can I explain? At Tinley Park Roller Rink, that was, when I was a kid, that was the most popular song. And when that song played, you found the prettiest girl and you asked her to skate with
Aww.
You. So to this day, when I hear You Take My Breath Away, I ask a pretty girl to roller skate with me.
Oh, yep. So Wendy, you going to roller skate
Please
with him?
Roller
no, you
skate
can
with
have
me.
Him.
All right.
You can have him, Terry.
That's,
seriously.
That's awkward.
You guys sound like a married couple.
Thank you.
You know what, though?
Thank you.
I will be completely honest with you. I spend more time with Bill than I do my husband, and probably you than with your wife.
Yeah.
And we don't even work long hours, but, you know,
yeah.
you with the band, you guys have been together forever, and then was there some downtime, and now Berlin?
It's true. It's like a relationship with everything but sex. Because
exactly.
we're together working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When we're on the road, it's 24/7.
Absolutely.
So I understand what you're saying.
Is it all the same original members of Berlin, or have there been a couple of swap in and outs?
There have been swap in and outs since the first record.
Is
the
that
only
right?
constants from the beginning were John and me.
Yeah.
We wrote the songs.
Yeah.
And so we would bring in people as needed
yeah.
to play it live, because in those days there were no tracks. It was impossible to do anything, you know,
sure.
other than live
sure.
with
right.
everybody.
Sure.
So we needed different people for the different tours.
How are some people, yourself included, able to keep their voice in the right quality? You know, so many of those songs have high notes or sometimes low notes that over time it's such a strain on your vocal cords, but you managed to pull it off. How do you do it?
Thank you. I quit smoking.
Is that it?
Yeah, at 32. And then my
Good.
Range widened
yeah.
high and low. And just, you know, I can't party like I used to
yeah.
anymore and still sing. So
yeah.
I do my best to get some sleep on the road, and
yeah.
I'm vegan.
Is that does that play into it a little bit?
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just trying to stay healthy, because
sure.
that's what a voice is if it's healthy, it works.
Yep.
And
yep.
thank God pleather has come a long way, because if you were a vegan before, you couldn't wear leather.
Not
and
anymore.
And now pleather, you know, because you're rock and roll. You gotta
well,
do
for
pleather.
Me, I'm not vegan for moral reasons, because I love animals. I'm
mm-hmm.
vegan because of that study. The China study, both my parents died of cancer.
Oh.
And I'm a candidate. So I read that book, The China Study, that's a U.S. study, and it linked animal protein with cancer directly.
Yeah.
So that's why I
do my best to avoid it.
That's the best reason. I mean, longevity, that's everything. So good for you. That's
well,
a great
plus
thing.
We all have kids, and I want to, you know, see them live and love the life and have fun.
Good.
All right. How is it, though, to have Terry Nunn as your mom? Because you're pretty rock and roll.
She doesn't always love it because I'm not always home. But I have a good husband. He's a great dad. And when I'm there, I'm there with her. So
how old is she?
She's 11.
11 years old. And her mom is Terry Nunn. Does she think you're cool?
Sometimes, if she can get something for it. You know, if one of her teachers knows me, then she'll just throw my name all over the place.
Oh, yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But, Terry, you know, for most of us who are parents, we think to ourselves, no matter how good or not good our relationship is with our kids, if you're a kid, to have your parent be a rock star would be the ultimate. We had Perry Farrell on with us about a year ago, and we said, your kids must just marvel at the fact that you are who you are. And they go, they couldn't care less. They just does nothing for them.
My boys, they couldn't care less.
Really?
They're just not into music at all.
No.
One was into death metal for a minute.
Oh, God.
And, you know, so I'm not cool at all. I'm just mom.
But when they see the legacy, when they see the MTV videos, when they hear about what you accomplished, that doesn't just kind of make them stand up and realize, wow, you're somebody. That doesn't do it?
Yeah, but they watch me scratch my butt every day.
Oh,
they don't.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
This isn't
well,
cool.
See, this
is just
I
mom, you know.
You think Take My Breath Away was 1986, and that's when you were roller skating, evidently?
I think that was my last year as a professional roller skater, yeah.
Professional roller skater now.
He's a liar.
Yeah.
You weren't just getting laid. You were,
no,
you were a professional roller skater.
I was touring, and yeah, it was a great way to make a living. Yeah, absolutely.
And my first years on radio, the song Sex, The Metro, so early 80s, that's the stuff I love.
Oh, thank you.
And boy, just, I can't believe 86 was Take My Breath Away. To me, oh, that was like 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it weird how time speeds up?
Absolutely.
It should slow down because I'm slowing down.
Yeah.
You know, I don't stay up till 5 in the morning anymore. So why isn't time slowing down?
Good question. Very good question. I knew
like
you'd get
it.
Metaphysical on us. I knew it. I just knew it.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, you probably dreamed of having this sort of a life. Is it what you imagined?
It's better.
It's better? How come?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Because there's so many gifts that come with it that I didn't expect.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to last this long. You know, God, Berlin is over 30 years now.
Yeah, right.
Nobody knows that when we start. You know, I don't know if you were in radio thinking I'm going to be doing this for this long. You hope so if you love it. But that's a gift by itself that I still get to play and sing and make a living at it and go all over the world. Oh, my God. You know, that's
something, isn't it?
Yeah, just a gift that keeps on giving.
City Winery tonight. Berlin will be there. Of course, Terry Nunn will be there. 1200 West Randolph right here in Chicago. You can go to citywinery.com. And your path could have taken a very different route because I realize this is the surprise and it's really not that big of a surprise.
This is the surprise, Terry. Put your seatbelt on.
No, but it's just, you know, you're an actress and you could have been portrayed in a very big movie. We have your audition for a particular role who had cinnamon buns on each side of her ear. Can we play
Wars.
A little of this?
Of course.
Here? All right, here we go. This is you and Harrison Ford.
There's only one Wookiee in the show, though, right?
Okay, anytime you want.
Well, that's George
Lucas.
Well, our
database and R2 are still secure.
Well, and I think that we're... due to the reward that you offered. Can we start again?
He's terrible.
Forgive me.
Harrison Ford is terrible.
He'll never get the job of Han Solo.
And he hated me.
Wait, explain this.
Did he hate you?
You can find it on YouTube. It's Terry Nunn Star Wars.
Yeah,
Star
you can
Wars
watch
audition.
It. It's hilarious.
It's awesome.
He looks 15. I look 12.
So how did this come about?
I was an actress in my teens before Berlin. I met John in Berlin when I was 18 years old.
Jeez.
So that's when my life went that way. But before that, I was in television trying to do films, trying to do anything. And this job came up and we sat in deck chairs. You can see it in the YouTube video. We sat in deck chairs reading these lines, you know, R2-D2, grab the fader, hurry. And, you know, I don't know what that is. What's an R2-D2? You know, the dark star Vader is coming. What? You know, and Harrison doesn't know either. So it's just funny to watch it because we're really trying to mean it, but we don't know what we're talking about.
And that was intentional. They're keeping you in the dark and just here read these lines.
Because it hadn't been made yet. So we didn't know what we were reading about.
You had no idea it would become the juggernaut that it became. No. I didn't even think they called it Star Wars at the original.
He did.
Oh, he did call it Star Wars
then?
Yeah,
he was a kid, too. He was in his 20s.
George Lucas.
And nobody knew who he was. It was like this new idea, and somebody said, well, go read for it. You know, something might happen.
Now, when you see the screen test with yourself and Harrison Ford, you say to yourself, the girl has a chance of playing Princess Leia, but that guy will never, ever, ever get hired playing Han Solo.
Well,
and
you know,
he
was the carpenter in George Lucas's house.
Yeah.
And he said he was an actor. So George said, well, come down and read with these people.
Wow.
He wasn't planning to give him the job.
And he got the job.
And he was great. The best Han Solo you could
imagine.
He was hot.
Why do you say he didn't get along
with you?
He
didn't like
me
at all.
Why?
He was just kind of, you can see it in the YouTube video too. I don't know. He was just arms crossed, just kind of looking away like, yeah, whatever, you know.
So. I think you made him nervous because he screwed his lines up and then he's like, can I do this again? I think a pretty girl sitting next to him, I think you made him nervous, if you want my honest opinion.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
So then when the movie hits and it becomes such a mega hit, do you just parenthetically say to people, oh, by the way, I could have been Princess Leia? Does that not even come up anymore?
No, because I got my dream, which was to make
music.
I hoped that I could make music, but I didn't know yet if I could. I wanted to try.
Yeah.
And it worked. So.
You could have sat in on that Cantina band scene and done some vocals with those guys. That would have been a cool scene. That would have been
one
a
of the
nice
weirdos.
Scene.
Yeah, you would have had to have prosthetics or something on your face to make you look like a human elephant or something.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
That
I appreciate
great,
that visual.
No, you're welcome. That's free. That's
I have to tell
that's
you,
free.
Terry Nunn's in the studio. I have to tell you, you have inspired my two-toned hair from the early '80s.
Ah.
I have always done like some kind of dark and light, and you still have that traditional hair, and I love it.
Thank you.
It looks great. We're going to take a quick break, and then are you going to grace us with your lovely voice?
I will sing for you.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Very,
awesome.
Very good.
Terry Nunn, singer, actress, almost Princess Leia, but now in Berlin and better than ever. And they're at City Winery tonight on Randolph. Go to citywinery.com. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Let's ride on the metro. This is one of my favorite songs. Are you going to be doing this tonight, maybe, at City Winery?
I might be, yeah.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank
I love
you.
That song.
It keeps going. People just love that song. And for us, it was the deciding moment in what Berlin was to us, because we were trying to find our sound.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what we were yet. And then when we finished Metro, it was like, okay, this is it. This is who we are.
Can I play a little bit of a song? I want to get your opinion because you've been in the music business a long time. This is a song that Wendy and I broke earlier today, and it has to do with the Olympics.
Okay.
Tell us what you think of this song, and be honest, all right?
As a song?
Yeah. As a song, as a performance.
Okay.
What do you think of this, Terry? Listen.
Okay. What if we both went a little bit crazy? Blame it on Rio. What if our hearts got a little bit hazy? Blame it on Rio.
What if we acted like fools, broke a few rules? What do we care? Be honest. It's kind of beautiful, isn't it?
This is the worst song I've ever heard.
It's truly bad.
It's like a little baby singing
I'm sorry.
Goat.
It's
so
awful.
You won't cover this. There's no way we can convince you to cover this song.
What were you thinking?
Bill brought this to the table this morning because what is that from?
It's from a movie called Blame It on Rio with Michael Caine, Joseph Bologna, Demi Moore and Michelle Johnson. So I was trying to find a song that had Rio in it because of the Olympics.
We were talking about the Olympics earlier.
Oh.
He found the worst song ever in the world to play.
Ever.
Yeah, come on, Duran Duran. Her name is Rio,
and she dances
and
on the sand.
Dancing on the sand. That's the one.
Do a little more. That's beautiful.
Dude.
That's fantastic.
Well,
I love
gonna
that.
Well, I'm going to sing for you in a second.
All right, that sounds good though.
I'll keep singing for
you. Should be
for
in
you.
The business. You're very good.
I could be somebody.
I know that. I know that.
All right, tonight, City Winery, a lot of hits. Berlin had a lot of hits, and you're going to do one for us. You set it up. You tell us what you need to do. Do you want any reverb?
I have no idea.
All right.
No, all right.
Well, we could do a little. You want a little reverb?
Wow, you have a reverb over there?
Oh, yeah.
Got it all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we coupled this song in this version with one of my favorite songs from my childhood with the same chord progression. So you'll hear it. It'll make sense
right.
when I sing it for you. It's no more words.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
talking, it all sounds fair. You promise your love how much you care. I'm still listening, I'm still unsure. Your actions are lacking, nothing is clear. No more words telling me you love me while you're looking away. No more words. No more words and no more promises of love. Remember when the words were new, carried a meaning of feeling so true. Are you looking for a long romance, a picture of passion, a one-time chance? No more words telling me you love me while you're looking away. No more words. No.
How you do it. Wow.
Fleetwood Mac, big fan of that. That was awesome.
Wow, Terry.
So you saw where we got the chord progression.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really, now, when you do something like that, because you switched gears there and you went into So that when you were first writing the song, you were inspired a little bit by that?
Absolutely.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. Yeah. Just by the whole feel of it.
Yeah.
And
wow, that was flipping amazing.
Stevie Nicks was a huge influence on me.
Have you met
up.
Her?
Yes.
And what was that relationship like? What
loved about meeting her is she was going through a lot of the same crap that we've gone through, where the record label is telling her she couldn't write anymore.
Yeah.
And she wasn't writing the hits they wanted. And she was upset, you know, because she's written a lot of amazing songs that to this day are played. So it was great for her to have somebody to talk to who would understand that.
Yeah.
And great for me to hear that, you know, all this, you know, sometimes it just crap keeps happening. You never get to a point where you've made it and you're immune to
so even
the stuff.
You. And even Stevie Nicks can't say to a record company, look, I kind of know what I'm talking about. Look what I've done in the past. They don't buy into that.
They don't buy into that. And they dropped her. And
that's
she moved
upsetting.
On. Well, you know, you move on and work with other people. And
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Wow. I am blown away. Bill, I swear it looked like you were crying for a minute.
I was
bringing back all these memories.
I was weeping.
Listening every second.
I thought if you miss a word,
you.
I got to jump in. I was ready to jump
you're gonna
in
help
in
me?
Case you forgot a word.
Thank you, Bill.
You'd go, no more. And I would just go, words. It's words.
So you sing too? As well as roller skate.
I do. All my attention's focused on the roller skating.
Big embellisher.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
You're an embellisher.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I sang like you, here's what I kept thinking the whole time. I would just always sing like, wait, we may have
because
to edit
girls
out.
Don't do that. You know, we,
no, of course
you,
not.
You just have them. And I have a voice and I appreciate it, but I don't sing all
you
the time.
You don't sing all the
In
time.
In fact, on my days off, the last thing I want to do is sing. I don't
really?
Want to hear music because it's my job. So
sure.
I don't want to listen to music. I want to do anything else
but
music
sense.
On my days off.
That makes sense.
I mean, don't you get home from work and you don't feel like talking because you've talked all day?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So it's the same thing.
So it's the same
All
thing.
Right, I get it now.
Bill has breasts too.
Yeah, I do. Isn't that weird?
Man boobs? No. Is that what you have?
No, he doesn't. He's in good
shape.
Yeah,
you look actually like you're pretty fit.
Thank you. That's
All right, you two can take this off the air.
All right,
we have
maybe
to
we
wrap
will.
Up.
Maybe we will.
Terry Nunn, it is an honor and a privilege. Oh. I love music, and go see Berlin tonight. It is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
You sound
great.
Right.
Keep
you.
Up the great work, Terry. A quick break, and we'll find out what's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.